It's a very special This Week in Google. This week, a look back at 2022. It's our best of episode next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 696 for Wednesday, December 28th, 2022. The best of 2022. Listeners of this program get an ad-free version if they're members of Club TWiT. $7 a month gives you ad-free versions of all of our shows, plus membership in the Club TWiT Discord, a great clubhouse for TWiT listeners. And finally, the TWiT Plus feed, with shows like Stacey's Book Club, The Untitled, Linux Show, The Giz Fizz, and more. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit, and thanks for your support. Hello, everybody. Leo Laporte. I'm sitting here all by myself. We sent Jeff Jarvis and Stacey and Ed home for the holidays because we are going to do a year-end best of, just like we do every year. It's a great chance to look back at some of the big stories of the year and some of our best moments in This Week in Google with Stacey, Ant, and Jeff, and a bunch of wonderful contributors. Let's kick things off with the perennial discussion on Twig. How is it that Google has screwed up messaging so entirely? It is, you know what? God damn Google. I'm sorry. I apologize to all the Christians out there, but I do want God to actually damn Google.
Apparently they already have. You know?
But honestly, what haven't they destroyed? Look at the messaging mess. And then now Hiroshi Lockheimer has a temerity.
We still have Gmail.
We still have Gmail.
Yeah. That and search.
And search still works. But
there have been reports that search isn't all that good anymore either.
I just saw that. Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that.
But back to the messaging thing. Ron
Amadio in the Ars Technica, yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, why didn't I write that?
It was a great piece.
Yeah. So good. But he basically he lays out the case about how Google is complaining that iMessage is too powerful, that they use bullying. They actually, Google accused Apple of bullying by making people who use Android devices green instead of blue.
How dare they? Well, this is taking off on the Wall Street Journal article, which because there was nothing else to write about, the journal suddenly discovered that people who are using Android Messenger feel left out of Apple Messages conversations.
but after laying out the case that Google is making against Apple, Ron just eviscerates them by pointing out that since Apple launched iMessage in 2011, same year they launched Google Plus, by the way, Google has launched 13 messaging products.
I think we've used them all.
Jeez.
The only person I ever talked on Allo with was you, Jeff Jarvis.
I know. And you're the only person I ever talked to.
Remember Allo?
Somewhere out in the cloud is our conversation. Allo.
Says, oh, this is dumb. Yeah, I think it's pretty dumb.
Ron's headline, after ruining Android messaging, Google says iMessage is too powerful. Please stop kicking our butts so badly. Google failed to compete with iMessage for years, and now it wants Apple to play nice. How many? 13, Mike? Wow.
13 that they've launched in total. They've killed a bunch of them, obviously, because it's Google. But now, even today, they have 8, and they're even incompatible with each other.
Jeez.
So today, they have 8 messaging solutions. But imagine, theater of the mind, imagine, if you will, ladies and gentlemen, if after seeing Apple launch iMessage in 2011, Google launched Google Messages in 2000, let's call it 2012, and said, this is the only messaging platform we will ever support. It's on cross-platform on everything. It supports all the bells and whistles. You can make phone calls. You can do this. You can do that. You can have it on an iPhone. You can have it on an Android phone. They would completely dominate this space if they had done that, right? Because iMessage has always been primarily for Apple users.
Yes.
All right.
They could have made it cross-platform.
They could have had the WhatsApp.
Yeah.
It would have been like WhatsApp.
Yeah.
But no, they are so disorganized and visionless that they just couldn't do that. So
Ron also points out, because what is, we've talked about this, that Google's saying, well, everybody should just use RCS. If Apple would only add RCS to iMessages, we'd be happy. Right. He says even if Google could magically roll out RCS, rich communication standard, it's a poor standard to build a messaging platform on because it's dependent on a carrier phone
carriers.
Bill. Right. It's anti-internet. It can't natively work on web pages, PCs, smartwatches, and tablets because those things don't have SIM cards. They don't have phone numbers. The carriers designed RCS, so RCS puts your carrier bill at the center of your online identity, even when free identification methods like email exist and work on more devices. Google is just promoting carrier lock-in as a solution to Apple lock-in. And unfortunately, I have to agree with him on that.
Yeah, but the solution, as I intimated a minute ago, is for them to have the have an alternative that isn't lock-in.
Right.
You know, to have something like WhatsApp, but from Google.
They could have put it everywhere. This is what they did with Chrome. Chrome has been hugely successful.
Yes.
Just make it free. Make it available. Google benefits because people use it.
And just have one.
See earlier discussion of WordPress.
Just have one. Yeah. Yeah, Google is only to only Google. Hangouts would have worked. They were
right. Well, Ron Amadio points out that, Hangouts is the best thing, that best messaging solution that Google ever came out with,
and they killed it.
Yeah, it was solid. So, wasn't perfect, but it was definitely
well. The reason Messages works, one of the reasons Messages works, besides the fact that it's the default messaging app on every iPhone sold, and you can't turn it off. The other reason is it degrades properly. So it uses the internet for data like WhatsApp, but it will also use SMS. And so you can have some assurance that you can iMessage everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has desktop. It works. It's a very Apple-y thing because you can't use it anywhere else.
And it's actually very secure.
And it's secure. Apple knows what you're doing, but other than that, it's secure.
Well, I don't think even Apple. Well, I mean, theoretically, they could find out what you're doing, but it's like it's heavily encrypted, so no third party is gonna.
It's a hell of a lot better than most stuff.
Yeah.
If Google, I used Hangouts for a long time because it worked on my iPhone, it worked on my Android phone, it worked on my desktop. Android messages will kind of do all of that. I have it on all those places, but it's not as good as Hangouts.
Yeah, Hangouts was definitely the solution for our family.
Yeah.
Because we could use it everywhere.
So no, you can't bitch Google.
What was their rationale for screwing it up? What, can you imagine what went through their heads?
Ron wrote a long, or somebody did. Ours had a long, a 25,000-word history. Yeah, it was Ron. History of Google's messaging.
And I did that once, too. I wrote something like that for Computer World. And by the time it was published, it already was out of date because they changed yet another thing. So I'm not even going to touch it anymore.
So it's fun. If you go through all the different apps, Google Talk, Google Voice, Google Wave, Google Buzz, Slides Disco,
what?
The Google Plus. I don't know what that is. I don't know. It's in the article. The Google Plus era, Google Plus Hangouts Video Chat, the first Hangouts, Google Plus Huddle Messenger.
Huddle.
Oh,
God. Do we remember that?
Yeah, now it's a Microsoft.
Yeah, I remember Huddle.
Google Docs Editor Chat, Google Hangouts, Google Spaces, Google Allo 2016, Google's Dead on Arrival WhatsApp clone, Google Duo, which I still use with my daughter for video calls, Google Hangouts,
still
Meet, they renamed it Meet, YouTube Messages, Google Hangouts Chat, they renamed it Chat, Google Maps
Did you just
Messages.
Say YouTube Messages? Oh, wow.
Yeah, in 2017, he actually says, yes, this really
no
was
sense.
A thing. Yeah.
No
Google
sense.
And RCS, Google Photos Messages, Google Stadia Messages, Google Pay Messages, Google Assistant Messages, Google Phone Messaging, Google Chat Part 2. And then the last bit, is anyone in charge at Google?
And the answer is no. And to answer your question, the elevator pitch for, or the short version of the answer is that just like Microsoft used to do under Ballmer, each division has its own messaging app and they don't talk to each other and they're competing with each other. And there's nobody in charge. There's no Steve Jobs. There's no Satya Nadella even to say, no, this is the one we're doing. That's it, period. Everybody, we're putting all the wood behind this particular arrow. Nobody ever did that. I've been maintaining for several years that Sundar Pichai is a horrible CEO. Nobody ever says that. But look at the result of what's happened since he took over. It's been a all this stuff, the closures, the failures, the this kind of thing. This is all getting worse and worse under Sundar Pichai's leadership.
Remember that great cartoon?
I agree with you.
It was making fun of Microsoft, where all the divisions are shooting at each other.
Yes.
I have the original on my wall at home, actually. The artist sent it to me. Apparently, Google decided that was a good way to do business, and they adopted the Microsoft method. Meanwhile, Microsoft had the good sense to stop doing that and to kind of at least try to unify themselves. It's sad.
For a long time, this spaghetti throw it against the wall and see what sticks approach was great for Google. They got some major hits. Gmail was a 20% project by one engineer initially. The idea of having advertising was just some engineer had to talk Larry and Sergey into doing ads, and they were like, they were against it. And they're like, no, we should do ads. And so for a long time, most of the things that were best about Google were the result of this kind of like every engineer kind of like spinning up their own thing, and then we'll try it and see what happens. But Google grew so big and they became so successful that they could no longer be that kind of a startup like company. And so now you have people betting their businesses on their infrastructure. You have all kinds of, billions of people using their products. And so you can't have that sort of scrappy startup, let's try it and see if it works kind of mentality. You have to have a vision about what you're going to do, and then you have to execute on that vision. And they just can't seem to do it.
This is Manu Cornett's
ADD treatment.
This is Manu Cornett's organizational trees for all the different companies. Here's Microsoft, where they're all shooting at each other. Actually, Google's is still, I think, fairly accurate. Although this,
you know what, that looks like their new building.
Yeah. Everybody reports to everybody else. Amazon's very hierarchical, and I think it still is.
That looks like Amazon's atrium.
It is. It's the downtown Seattle atrium. Facebook looks like a giant beanbag. Everybody's connected. Apple, this is from the era of Steve Jobs era, centralized point, although I think it's probably still the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then Oracle is like a giant legal division, a little engineering division. Manu, you got it. You still, and I'm very proud to have this on my wall. By the way, Satya Nadella, I didn't realize this, in his book, Hit Refresh, in the first page, mentions this cartoon. And says, this was the thing I was trying to solve. So Google apparently did not get that message.
Where did that cartoon originally run? Just on a site? Or
Manu published it on, it's gone now, unfortunately, on Bonkers World. But it's no longer there. But I am very proud to have a original version of it from Manu sent us. Because we talked about it all the time.
You're going to make it an NFT?
Ooh. Now you're talking.
Okay, I will tell you, though, when I ask normal people every now and then, I'm like, hey, you know what a cookie is? They're like, oh, yeah, it's that thing that it's on the web. It follows you.
It keeps popping up on the screen.
Here's
seriously.
Yeah. No, so here's the Washington Post. Google proposes a new way to track people around the web again. That's not even accurate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's good old clickbait right there.
Yeah.
Yep. Moral panic. Ant, I gave you the warning. It was time for the moral panic. You fell apart. Jeez.
Ant's producing the show, Jeff. Come on, man.
I'm not producing today.
No, he's not. He had plenty of time to do it.
He pushed the button.
Never mind. I was trying to help you, Ant.
There was a changing of the guard at the TriCaster, and they didn't catch it. So, Ant, would you push the button again, and the folks who push the buttons on the other side of the room? Maybe they'll push the button at the same.
There we go. I feel so good. Thank you, Ant.
Ant has prepared.
That's a bow on the top of the discussion.
It does need a sound effect, because remember, most of the audience is not looking. They're only listening.
Yeah, so
they only know we have to work on that.
What would be the...
It's uh-oh music. It's got to be real uh-oh music. No, it's more like boom, boom, boom. It's Jaws. Yeah.
I'll dig through my library of sounds.
Here, turn that up, Burke. Is that sinister enough? Do it again here.
I don't hear it.
Moral panic.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. I'll buy you that. Here's another one. Let's try this here. One more time.
moral panic.
I think you need a little more panic in your voice, Leo.
I think you need the moral panic and then the boom.
Oh, time it better.
Okay. I think, yeah, time it.
Moral panic. Moral panic. Moral panic.
We'll work on that. We'll workshop that.
I like giving Leo notes. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. We have way too much fun on this show.
We have way too much time in our lives.
Moral. I was about to say, I think it's time.
Moral panic.
Oh, this is making me so happy.
I think we need to cut the sound a little short, and then we'll get there.
I will fix it on my end.
When will we three meet again in fire, lightning, or in moral panic?
Okay. You want a heartbeat and a shark sound, and yeah, all right. I can work on that.
Sound.
I was a radio production director for many years. I could put something together. We'd get that. We get those notes from the morning guy. I need a moral panic sound. Got it for you. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, a lot of people listen to the show. We should be aware and try to give them some fun as well.
Also with us, she's back. Stacey. Well, she wasn't gone last week, but she is.
I was about to say, I was here yesterday or last week.
Last week. Host of Stacey's Book Club, Stacey Higginbotham from Stacey on IoT.com and the IoT Podcast with Kevin Toefel. Hello, Stacey.
Hello, y'all.
Half of your eyes look one way, half the eyes look the other. Her husband did her right eye today. In a beautiful moment of togetherness. That's really sweet. I should get Lisa to do my eye makeup sometime. I think that's a nice idea.
Do you do eye makeup?
No, of course not. I did used to. For years.
I was just saying, you were on TV, right? Yeah.
I have my own makeup kit with, I know what my shades are and all that, and my contour and fill. And the minute we'd started doing these podcasts in video, I said, I'm not wearing makeup. Sorry.
I did my eye makeup today, too.
You look fabulous. Did you paint on those eyebrows? I think you did.
No,
you painted them.
That's just focus peeking.
Were you around Leo when HGTV came in and they started doing the air brush thing?
I was doing live with Regis and Kelly, and the makeup artist. You go there, you get made up before the show. The makeup artist said, "We're using airbrushes today," and she painted my face with an airbrush. Because if you just use regular foundation and powder, you could see it. There's enough detail. You could see the powder.
Yeah.
So they painted
HG and HD.
Yeah, and HD. And apparently Kelly had brought that on. She had a TV show. I can't remember the name of it, but she had a primetime TV show. And they were using it there, so they wanted to try it on. They didn't stick with it. It was back to the
old. No, I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, you don't need that.
I had my makeup done for Fox TV once, and oh my.
Did they paint you right?
They did, but I walked out looking almost the same as I normally do, but a little better.
Yeah. That's what you want when you die.
They took like 45 minutes. I still don't understand were doing with my face.
Oh, we used to have hair and makeup we're tech pampered. TV. It would literally take you 45 minutes. You'd have to come an hour early to get hair done and makeup done. And then they do your nails. They do the whole thing.
Nails?
Well, we were showing stuff.
True. Showing products.
Oh, I see. Yeah. You're a hand model. George.
Yeah.
It was George. No, it was Kramer. Kramer was a hand model.
Kramer used to lotion his hand. So I got good at going, you know, rub the outline. If I were showing this phone, because you don't want to just go, look, there's the phone. Mm-hmm. You go like this.
That's right.
Vanna. It's your Vanna.
It's like the Price is Right. Yeah. And you're just slowly stroking it.
You folks have no idea how many times Queen Pruitt gave me crap for
bad fingernails.
Yeah. If I did a product demo and, you know, we do the B-roll of me showing the product and I didn't have the manicure done.
Okay. You want a tip?
She let me know.
You want a tip? I'll give you a tip. Everybody, this is going to be your tip of the week. Because for a while with Tech TV, I would go and I would get my nails done. And I went to a place, it was $20. And eventually they stopped. They said, you're paying too much. You need to go to the $5 nail place. I said, I'm not going to the $5 nail salon. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so, funguses and stuff.
I said, really, $20 a week, you're not. Anyway, I stopped, but I did it myself. And I asked, and they said, look, all you need to do, the manicure said, get a good nail brush every day in the when you shower or whatever. You use the nail brush, scrub, 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 and then you put a nice little cuticle oil on your cuticles.
Yep.
And you're good. And, you know, you can cut, obviously, but you're good. That means your nails will look good enough that you can do the hand modeling.
Have you maintained this toilette since then?
I still do this, yes, every morning.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I get lax on it, and she lets me know because we have all of that stuff here with that being her profession.
Oh, that's her job.
She does manicures.
That's her job. I remember.
When I first met her, she was like, she looked first at my nails and commented on that before anything.
Yeah, still does.
I was grateful I had just had them done.
She's done my nails, actually. I went when she was at the manicure shop down here. I went down, got my nails done.
Now, who would think this would be our topic?
The lead story today.
I don't know how we got here.
Our lead, you know what our lead story should be? Goodbye, Flock. Flock, you.
You never got to say hello to Flock.
Yeah, Google says, and I think this is really an interesting story, said yesterday they were going to replace, as you remember, they had announced no more third-party cookies. Everybody hates them. Good, that's fine. But we do need some way to sell targeted advertising. So we're going to have the Federated Learning of Cohorts, which was a kind of retronym, awkward retronym, because everything in this area had bird-themed. So this Flock would essentially watch what you do, just the same way as Google always did, but instead of having a unique identifier for you, they would put you in a cohort of people with similar interests. They never really explained how big this cohort would be, but the thing that I think upset people was then when you go to a website, your Flock cohort would be sent to the website. Like, you know, hi, here's Leo. He's 3994-7. And people didn't really like that. It wasn't clear how big the cohort would be. I think there's also, it's funny because they're in trouble with the EU. Axel Springer, our favorite has sued them for ending cookies.
Yeah, yeah. Springer is the one who led the fight against Google, used their political clout, got the EU to go after Google. Everybody's screaming, privacy, privacy, datenschutz, get rid of cookies, they are evil. And then Axel Springer says, uh-oh, we can't target any ads. No, don't get rid of cookies. That's
very
bad.
Confusing. The EFF did not like Flock because there was this concern that, as always with these things that are so-called anonymized, it's possible to de-anonymize. And they were a little worried that if people started to combine your Flock ID with other profile information, they might actually be able to figure out who's who and all of that. So Google has, I think in response to the EU, I don't know really, in response to privacy advocates.
I think there was a lot of reasons because a lot of people were unhappy with Flock.
And yeah.
So and they're coming up with?
Topics. Oh. Topics. It was just a proposal. I mean, they never implemented it. It was only in beta.
Right.
So now it's topics. Topics.
Which is topics.
Topics.
Are?
So Ben Galbraith, who's senior director for product, acknowledged privacy concerns with Flock, said topics was easier for users to understand. It would also make it easier for Google to remove sensitive topics from being targeted. So topics lets advertisers target online users based on a topic they might be interested in, fitness or travel. Chrome does this automatically. Now, it's not, by the way, this is all proposal, not implemented yet. Chrome will generate 5 topics based on your browser history with, and this is important, participating websites. It then sends 3 topics, one from each of the past 3 weeks, to participating sites to share with their advertising partners. Topics like Flock are not permanent. In this case, they're stored for 3 weeks, then deleted. There are 350 topics. But Google's saying by doing this, instead of saying what your interests are in Flock, we're seeing what your interests are, but we could also just ignore things like, I don't know, whatever, you know, mental health issues.
My searches for mental health resources.
Yeah, guns, that kind of thing. So topic data is stored on your device.
Manicures.
Yeah, they. This will be a good test. If I get a bunch of manicure information in my Instagram feed, I think we'll know. So it's never stored on Google, unlike third-party tracking cookies, which allow companies to use tracking pixels so they can go cross-site. This can't really go cross-site. You will be, unlike Flock, you'll be able to see what topics you are being, flogged with. They're being sent to sites. If you don't like a topic, I like this. You can remove it.
This is great.
Yeah. You can say, what, I'm not interested in tennis rackets. I am interested in pickleball.
I looked once for my wife, and I don't play tennis rackets. Yeah, I'm too old. I play pickleball.
And Google says users will be able to disable the feature completely, which is really interesting. I think Google wants to maintain its ad model, but they really do want to respond to people's privacy concerns.
Yeah, it's a way to it's a value add.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Ant.
I think so. You said this is stored on the device and Chrome is just reading it that way?
Well, Chrome generates it and then stores it in its, store. Okay.
It stores it in wherever it stores cookies.
Back pocket.
It's
back pocket.
But it's stored locally on your device. It's not sent up to the cloud, associated with your IP address, correct?
So they announced, that's right. That's the key, right? It's anonymized.
Yeah.
Although it is in a way associated with your IP address, because when you go, let's say you go to some bass fishing place and it sends out, you go to Dick's Sporting Goods website and it's going to say, well, here's the three topics Leo's interested in. But Dick's is getting that plus my IP address. So that's why they have to expire them on a regular basis, right? So they can't start building a picture of you.
The other interesting thing here is what could be done. Go ahead, Stacey, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, Google says they also are going to send fake topics to about 5% of the websites to make sure the topic generation is actually random, which I thought was kind of like, does that mean 5% of your ads are they going to give people a discount of 5%? I get where they're coming from, but it's kind of weird.
I've been a little skeptical because Google has its own way of tracking who you are and all of that. But I think that Google really is, I'm going to give them credit for trying to find a system that users can tolerate that gives the advertisers some of the information.
Yeah. Which might actually give you more relevant advertising. Here's a question. Did you see anything whether an advertiser can do it or not? That's how it got abused on Facebook. Right. If I decide I want to advertise this thing, but not to people who like hip hop as a way, this job as a way to not have
kind of redlining, in other words,
that kind of stuff. Yeah. Right. And the knot was an issue there, which I think was the primary one.
I don't think that Google can control the knot because they're going to send here's on the Google keyword blog.
Small sample.
They're going to send out, Jeff's interest in autos and vehicles, books and literature, comics and animation, rock music, team sports. There's no reason that Dick's Sports couldn't say, rock. I don't want anybody's interest in rock and just say, we won't advertise to that person. The point that Google's making on this diagram is you don't know. You can't tell what's in that cookie. It's code. But you can see very clearly, because Chrome will show this, what interest is sending to advertisers. And you see that X, you can delete them. So I think this is – I like this solution. Here's Google's 1 minute video to describe this here. Are you getting audio –
You didn't test your audio, Leo. Left, left, right, right. Left, left, right, right.
Yeah, so maybe there's no audio in it. We heard the TikTok.
Oh, okay.
Hmm.
Introducing Topics.
Thank
Privacy
you.
Sandbox's newest proposal to help you preserve your privacy online while enabling sites to show about with Topics, your browser will note topics related to participating sites you visit.
Let me do this. I'm a trained professional. For example, if you've recently visited sites about sports, the browser may note that sports is one of your topics.
Oh, your topics
will help determine the ads you see.
And a site won't need to know who you are to show you an ad about sports. They just know you like it. You have no control. Oh, sorry. You do have control over your topics, and you can remove topics in the browser. Or you can turn them off altogether. I'm cold reading it, man. With topics, the specific sites you visited are no longer shared across the web, like they might have been with third-party cookies.
Third-party evil cookies.
We're testing topics soon to get feedback from the industry so that it works together with all of the other privacy sandbox proposals to protect your privacy and keep the internet a valuable source of free information for now and the future. And that's the balancing act. They want to support advertising, which is what supports free internet content, but they also want you to feel comfortable with the information they share. I don't know. Negatives? Stacey, can you see a negative here?
No. I mean, I think it's mostly positive, especially if they make it easy for you to look, because then you can also, I mean, the negative for an advertiser is I could go in and I could be like, I'm so sick of seeing all these high-priced coats because I keep buying them. So then I'm like, I am not interested in high fashion. And then I would stop buying high fashion because of advertising.
Google
has not published, interestingly,
on GitHub details about the API. If you want to start getting ready as a web site designer to support this, I think it's
I think there's a further opportunity is to let me pick my topics.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Tell you, I want the car.
But you might. I mean, I will say that especially because it's short range, like 3 weeks. Let's just go with every time I binge watch a show, I start Googling like mad to hear like who's the actors, where have I seen this person?
Yep, right? Me too.
So it captures that, which is a very fleeting interest, but might be interesting for an advertiser. And then it goes away when I'm probably no longer interested in it. If I had to manage that, I'd just be like, I'm interested in IoT and clothes.
But the interesting thing, too, here is Google's always, always sussed out topicality right from the very, very beginning of advertising. So how are they going to know an expensive coat site? I guess that's pretty obvious. They're coats and they're expensive. But, how does the topicality determined is going to be interesting to see, because we've never had transparency on that before. Why this ad appeared on this page?
It would almost almost makes it look like they have access to the history, even though they say they're not looking at your history.
Of which, the user or the site? And
the user.
But they are very obviously looking at your history. I mean, if I look at like my Google News feed, for example, I mean, all I have to do is search like one freaking, I don't know, like hot tub chemicals, and for the rest of my life, I'm reading stories about hot tubs. So I assume
that is annoying.
It's going to be built on, I mean, that's easy for Google, right?
Yeah.
It may not be accurate. So I can go in and be like, please stop showing me ads for hot tubs.
I mean, Google's not going to make privacy advocates and advertisers happy. So it's like any compromise. It's not going to be perfect. As a user, I'm satisfied with this. Will advertisers feel like they're getting enough information? I mean, honestly, if you're Dick's Sporting Goods and it says you're interested, I don't know, pickleball is probably too granular. That's the problem. So it might say you're interested in racket sports. Then maybe they'd like more granularity. I don't know. I haven't heard from advertisers. I don't know.
The other interesting piece here is the correlations that occur. I remember early on, I'm forgetting the name of the company that was bought by AOL long ago. They found, for example, that people in the Army and Navy and so on correlated very highly with big screen TVs. So you might be wanting to advertise a big screen TV, but you go toward military interest or vice versa, right? And that's because you have your own data as an advertiser that says these are the useful correlations that we have.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I mean, that's been happening for a while, so I don't have issues with that.
I mean, I think
but we're cool with that, right?
Right, we are, but we got to think about, how does this, here's the test, I think. If I'm a job site and I'm advertising jobs, am I using some topics to get rid of, people who may be less desirable for my employer?
People who aren't a culture fit?
Right. And so Google's going to have to test out, and they're good at this, right? Going back to Matt Cutts, they're good at sussing out bad uses of things, but far better than Facebook ever was, of seeing how could this system get misused. And it will be. It surely will be. No doubt about it.
Okay. Anyway,
interesting topic.
I commend them for trying to find something that makes people happy. And I'm sure I haven't seen the EFF yet. Let me see if the EFF is already up in arms over this.
Well, but also the Washington Post and the New York Times, I put it in this tweet. It's rather than saying a new way to target ads, a new way to track you.
Yeah.
Remember, I don't think that's a problem. I think it's important to explain to people that these companies are tracking them. I have a really interesting tracking story, but it's not on the thing.
But let me just say this.
Talk about it.
And then let's do that. But it's not tracking.
The common person's understanding.
Yeah, it's not
tracking. I disagree with you on the New York Times headline scaring.
Well, but
let Leo defend me.
I'm going to defend you. So cookies, as Google pointed out, track you in the sense that you... the Facebook like button sees multiple sites that you've been on. This is a very different system where the Chrome browser, which sees those sites anyway, then extracts from that an interest, five interests, which you can see what they are. You can turn them off and sends that to the website. That is not the same thing at all. That's not really tracking you, in my opinion. Now, maybe, do you think, Stacey, consumers we'll see that mechanism that the browser then says this is what
media
you're interested in. Will that be seen as tracking? I don't feel like that's tracking. It's not following you in any way.
Anytime something pops up and tells the average person, hey, I think you like this, or I know you like this,
yeah,
right? And they're correct.
They don't like that.
That creeps people out.
Yeah.
They don't care that it follows them other places. That's a real subtle distinction most people don't care about.
They should, because that's the problem. That's why we don't like third-party cookies.
But how sophisticated does someone have to be to? So, okay, can I tell you my tracking story? Because I think this is interesting,
please.
And it ties to this. So, I read it. My daughter is a sophomore in high school, so she's looking. We're about to start the whole college thing, so we got a book by a Wall Street Journal reporter about getting money for college. And in that book, he talked about how colleges are now using pixel trackers on emails to track when applicants open their emails, how quickly they respond, how many times they open it. And they use that information.
I thought that was old news.
Okay, but they use that information for getting a sense of how interested someone is in the school and for allocating scholarship money.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, crap, I got to get my daughter Proton Mail because I don't want her casual searches or interests in something to cost us money. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So I think it's old news that, yes, there are pixel trackers in email. Right. We might all be like, yeah, I know. But when you think about how those are being used, it's kind of like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Ways that might surprise you.
It's
well, and
data.
That's what I mean. Like, people are not sophisticated, or it's not even not sophisticated. We just don't think everything through to that level because, my God, we sound like paranoid, crazy folk, I guess. Right. But anyway, why I've been thinking. Yeah.
I agree. I think to normals, point, air quotes, whatever. Normals, we do sound paranoid when we start talking about privacy and security, even though it's pretty blatant what's going on.
I think Google has an opportunity here. And this is me just speculating. to your point, Leo, about the awareness of people, and to your point, Stacey and Ant, about the nervousness is to be very strong of saying control your advertising, control what topics you have, control what topics you don't get. I've always argued I wanted on the sites that I ran when I ran them. I wanted the opportunity for somebody to say, "Don't show me this advertiser," and sell that data to the advertiser. These people don't want to see you. You figure out why, but that's valuable. You're wasting your money trying to get to these people. So stop going to those people, right? Mm-hmm, I think there's an opportunity to become, I hate using this word, very proactive and allow users to, in fact, not just feel in control, but be in control. It's going to generate more data that is actually valuable because it comes from, it's a permission system that says, yeah, I am looking for a car right now. No, I was looking for my daughter. She already bought the car. Stop with the car ads, please. Stop wasting your money and my iSpace. There's a lot of opportunity there, I think. They won't do it.
Stacey Higginbotham, Jeff Jarvis, Ant Pruitt. This week in Google, we're looking at the best of 2022. We continue on with the story of a guy who was hacked by North Korea. Don't worry, he got his revenge.
And then there was North Korea hacking some dude.
Then we get to bonkers North Korea.
And then some dude hacking North Korea back. This
All right,
is
so
the
here's
story
the story
that Stacey was setting up. Yeah, tell us about it.
I will save you a click. But essentially, a security researcher, an individual security research who goes by P4X, he realized that he was getting hacked and he was trying to figure out why. And he realized it was North Korea. And he was kind of miffed about this because nation states attacking an individual security researcher seemed unfair.
Stacey, had he done something in North Korea to warrant this, or they just kind of picked him
out? No, this was part of like a general like nation state just checking in on, you know, people. Like every nation tracks hackers in other nations. They all, it's part of the, like, they might be participating actively in the zero-day market, but it might just be like they know who's active in security research.
We're watching
North Korea was just... Right. Well, mm-hmm. both that and just to Learned see, like, has this guy figured out anything cool that we can steal? Great. So it really upset P4X and nobody did anything. So that didn't sit well with him. So he said, you know what? F it. I'm going to hack him back. So here's his quote. It felt like the right thing to do here. If they don't see we have teeth, it's just going to keep coming, said the hacker. I want them to understand that if you come at us, it means some of your infrastructure is going down for a while. So P4X went and found unpatched vulnerabilities in North Korean internet systems and basically took the country's internet down using DDoS attacks.
So he's the guy who did that. We mentioned that last week. So he's the guy who did that. Wow.
He's that guy. And he was doing it because he felt pissed. So this is the debate about hackbacks. But I just thought it was bonkers that... this dude in his pajamas has the power to take down Korea's internet or North Korea's internet. Yay.
Such is the internet in 2022, right? So many people have, you know, so much power. And they can just do it from their pajamas.
And the writing is, living room. You know, it's wired. So it's really good wire. It's good writing. You know, they're.
Yeah. Wow.
So. Here, I'll do this because as a journalist, I like it. But responsibility for North Korea's ongoing internet outages doesn't lie with U.S. Cyber Command or any other state-sponsored hacking agency. In fact, it was the work of one American man in a t-shirt, pajama pants, and slippers, sitting in his living room at night after night, watching alien movies and eating spicy corn snacks, and periodically walking over to his home office to check on the progress of the programs he was running to disrupt the internet of an entire country.
Jeez.
Aww.
Holy moly.
Okay, so that was my bonkers cybersecurity story of the
Love
day.
It. Right on. Thank you for throwing that in there.
Do you listen to KUOW in beautiful Seattle?
I do.
Okay, be careful. If you have if you have a 2016 Mazda.
I do.
Do you really?
Yes, I do.
Well, so this tempts
me. He's an NPR listener.
This actually intrigues me because it turns out there's a flaw in the rendering. Coders will know all about this. They're not sanitizing their inputs. There's a flaw in the engine. They actually use JavaScript to render the screen.
Not the car engine. Not the car engine. The geek engine.
The code engine. To render the screen, they use JavaScript on the entertainment unit. And apparently it has trouble with... Unicode characters and some punctuation, and it'll actually crash it. So there are apparently a lot
of crash it, but brick it.
And there are a lot of people who can only listen to KUOW in their Mazda, permanently stuck at 94.9 FM. because they have a little extra stuff in the text.
Ars Technica did a better story because KUOW's story starts talking
about
5G.
They didn't understand it. 5G. That's why.
I read their story. I was like, what?
Well, of course they didn't understand it. So, yeah, Ars Technica figured out that's what it is. It's a Unicode issue.
So it's not a 5G issue. No, for people
not at all.
Who are looking at that. Yeah. But this to me, okay, so I love this story because it shows like we're building out as we connect all this stuff, and we have companies who are not necessarily used to dealing with software over like a 10-year time frame, maybe like a car's life, figuring out how not to accidentally break it. And then what happens when you break it? Who's responsible? Because the issue here is they break these people's infotainment centers. It's going to cost them money to actually physically replace it if they were one of the
But it's Mazda's fault for not properly handling. You can't assume what's going to come in over the airwaves. It's a mistake.
Right.
Now, admittedly, KUW blew it. But wait a minute. They're not the first to do this. There's a podcast called 99% Invisible. Have you heard of this podcast?
Mm-hmm.
There's a great podcast. It's a great podcast, but don't listen to it in your 2016 Mazda, because this is the same thing. There's a percent in the name of this show. They actually had to create a Mazda safe feed.
Oh man.
Oh wow. So then it is Mazda's fault.
It's totally Mazda's fault. Mm. So the Mazda safe feed has 99 percent invisible instead of
a symbol.
Percent sign.
So, because Mazda's not replacing, Mazda's like, no, we're not going to replace that. That's
bad coding. It's not.
But they,
Mazda said, look, there's a spec for it's, you know, it's this additional information that comes through a radio channel nowadays, mm-hmm. that you display on the screen and it shows you the name of the artist, blah, 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 that KUOW sent album art through and it crashed the Mazda software. But honestly, I mean, you can debate, and Mazda's going to say, well, that's an old car. We're not going to fix it, because it is. At least it's a six-year-old car. But it is their mistake.
Hey.
That's not an old car. My car's six. Yeah. I mean, my car's 7 years old, and it's a Tesla, y'all.
I haven't driven a car older than three in years.
You're the guy who goes off buying $1,500 phones.
I'm not rich. I'm not rich. Oh. I just, we lease our cars so that we get a new one every 3 years, and that's why. So, Ars Technica did figure it out. Apparently, so did 99% Invisible. And honestly, it's not, I'm sorry, 26, it's 2016. So, it's a 6-year-old Mazda.
Well, it says it affects cars from 2014 to 2017.
Oh, interesting.
So the KUOW, I think there's two issues. I think there's two separate things running around here. One is specific to 2016-year-olds. And apparently Mazda does say, I feel like ours must have updated the story, that customers can, Mazda will replace it now.
For goodwill. They're not admitting any culpability. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But because of the chip shortage, it might take a while.
Right.
Meanwhile, they got to listen to nothing but liberal NPR. It's a conspiracy, I tell you.
So sanitize your inputs, kids.
Yeah, this is so tough. We're going to see, like, I'm imagining, like, if I download some software to run, like, energy management for my home, which I'm, like, super excited about. But, like, what if that does something to like my old Nest thermostat? I'm like, oh crap, how do I fix that? You know, we're getting to this era where we've got all these software interdependencies and we're not creating provisions to help consumers through the like resulting problems. And it's going to suck.
XKCD ish episode or comic strip 327, Exploits of a Mom. Hi, this is your son's school. We're having some computer trouble. Oh dear, did he break something? In a way. Did you really name your son Robert Tick (drop table students ?) Oh, yeah. Little Bobby Tables, we call him. Well, we've lost this year's student records. I hope you're happy. And I hope you have learned to sanitize your database inputs.
Nice.
Little Bobby Tables.
So a moment from Uncle Jeff here, when the Chicago Tribune was switching from Linotypes to Cold Type, big machine to set type with photography. The whole thing died one day. The edition almost didn't get out. And the reason was that a golf score happened to be the code for erase core.
That's hilarious.
So everything stays the same. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Wow. All right, Meta mates, let's talk about Facebook.
No, we're Twitmates. We're Twitmates.
Okay.
I really wonder why we're all presuming that's where the emphasis is in the spelling of Meta mates. Like, why not Metamates or something like that?
Or Metamates.
Metamates.
We're a Metamate. I want to go with Metamate.
I'm a Metamate.
You're by declaring that's how we do it. It's Metamate.
So Mark Zuckerberg, apparently without smiling, although I think that's pretty common, announced it on all hands. The Verge was watching. That was the new name for every... Now, I think Mark got a bad rap on this, by the way. I understand what he's saying is, you know, we're like shipmates. We need to look out for each other. He's just trying to get her to pull in the same direction. I don't think that's so bad. It's a little tone deaf, you know, but sometimes a boss does that. I've probably done something like that. I never suggested Twitmates, did I, Ant? I don't think
negative.
So. No. But I understand that.
I wouldn't have come on if you had done that.
But he's certainly getting mocked.
You did refuse to use the word podcast.
I used Netcast for a long time, and I think it's a better word for it, to be honest.
They did that.
I'll defend that.
Yeah. As you should.
Neologisms sometimes can sound a little, I don't know, clunky. And metamates or metamates or metamates or whatever it is. can come
the
off.
The last pronunciation sounds like a good tequila.
Yeah. Metamate. Tequila for the feed. They've also rebranded the feed. It's not a news feed. It's just a feed. That's new
good.
Name for it.
That's good.
Yeah,
there were a couple of changes that actually seemed like you're paying attention and bringing in some important thoughts into your new vernacular. And then there's some that just feel like, no, you're completely missing the point of everything. Everybody's complaining about everything.
Yeah. Well, the whole Meta, the whole renaming your company Meta is, I don't know, odd. I think, but you know, now here we are, a few weeks in, we're used to it. Do you think? I think all the mocking of that has gone away. I mean,
I'm not done.
You're not done?
I'm not done.
It's Meta's better than Facebook. Let's face it. Facebook's a terrible name.
No, I mean, I think the problem is Facebook may be a terrible product, but I don't think that the name of it is necessarily bad because it gets to the point of what was actually sort of good and useful and valuable about Facebook that made people want to use it, which was the idea that you'd be connected to your friends. That was a
connection.
Nice idea.
Yeah.
So if only that were the thing that it was actually delivering on and delivering on well, I think it would be a great name for a great product. The problem is it's a failed promise that it isn't meeting and making worse all the time. Calling the whole company Meta, you know, maybe it is a more appropriate name given that they've got, you know, their fingers in so many pies, but it doesn't really redeem it. It doesn't solve any of the shortcomings of the Facebook product. And, you know, also from a trademark perspective, it was just weird. Every single trademarky lawyer I knew was like, what did you just do? Like, are you paying attention to your lawyers? You just gave them like a tiny amount of time to turn around a really impossible registration task after they've done everything to preserve your other trademark and build around the goodwill and stuff. It looked like an impetuous business decision, and that I can't be impressed by that, even if it accidentally turned out to be a not completely terrible one.
It's as if Mark read a book. In fact, there are books like this. Is it Noam Chomsky who said language determines culture? That the words you use are an important determinant in how you feel about things. And so remember, it used to be that the company's slogan was move fast and break things. Clearly not the best slogan.
Wonder why everybody hates them, because they broke everything.
It worked. They changed it to move fast. They left out the break things. It was understood. It wasn't. It was implicit, not explicit. On Tuesday, they announced the slogan is now move fast together.
What's that?
Not
run
apart like we used to.
Move fast together.
Actually,
Metamates.
Now that you say it, that isn't really great, but it did register as a significant improvement, which
it is
doesn't
better.
Speak yes. well of the original yeah. benchmark.
Although
they were surpassing.
It does call up the potato sack races where two people's legs are tied together. I don't know.
Oh,
handcuffed.
Right. Handcuffed together. Yeah. Together. The companies, besides Metamates,
the company's
I'm going to do it.
The slide deck says employees will be expected. Now, I remember for years, people would say God first, then country, then family, right? If you work at, if you're a metamate, you're meta first, followed by your meta mates, followed by the individual. That's the new secular trinity.
Why is this getting defined in a mission
statement? Why is this?
Any corporate document at all, period?
I hate mission statements.
Zuck said the company's corporate values will be live in the future. Not a good plan for those of us who have to live in the present. And be direct and respect your colleagues. It sounds like they're really doubling down on
cultish.
Like each other. Will you damn it? Damn it. Start working together. Damn it. Maybe there's, I think this is a response to a problem. I don't know.
I think some of it reads as a, okay, we're going to improve in a couple of areas. And I could kind of see some of the language be like, you know, anti-harassment and, you know, if you've got a corporate culture, you might as well foster a good one and fine, use the right language that might help. But yeah, it also doesn't read as anything that at best it's naive and worse, it's heavy-handed in an inappropriate way.
Does it make you feel better that Douglas Hofstetter coined the term metamates when asked by a Facebook executive what his advice was? He said, call yourselves metamates.
I wonder what people were calling themselves on their own volition, like a spontaneous word.
Well, I think the word we hear all the time, which I find obnoxious, is my team, my teammates. Yeah. It's always the team in Silicon Valley.
So Instagram apparently had a phrase, which is a reference to a naval phrase as opposed to a naval gaze.
Well, yeah, I was going to say.
Shipmates self. That's your priority. So Meta's made it metamates me.
It sounds cultish to me.
Actually, I've been thinking about this.
Comrade, you got a problem with that?
I've been reading.
It sounds like magic words, like with what Ant was saying. It sounds like just add these magic words and all of our problems will go away.
It's going to get mocked inside too.
Now, I got a beef with Mr. Jarvis. You said you don't like mission statements.
I don't like the process of trying to figure out what's the mission statement versus what are the other two things you always have? The values and the something else. No, you need them. We're redoing ours at the school right now. I agree with all that. I have been through so many multi-session meetings tearing apart it. I hate the process. Because it doesn't really get so often to the real mission that we have. It's a bunch of flowers around the vase, or is it a vase?
And then you also said you didn't like the term teammates.
Is that only because I hear it used all the time?
Yeah, there's
everybody, it becomes exclusionary too. Oh, I got my team. What's my team doing? Yeah. And there's kind of but disagree, please, Ant, with both.
But how do you create? Look, do you accept that you need a corporate culture, and how do you create that?
By the work you do.
By
the leadership you get.
Corporations are all siloed one way or another. So the whole team aspect of it makes a ton of sense to me. They're all sort of siloed, but at the same time, they have one shared goal, which is profit. So each team is working whatever they need to work to get to said profit. And so as they're speaking to one another, we're coworkers, but it's my teammate. And I think teammate, at least for me, resonates better as someone that's got a shared goal and we're on that same mission to try to get there together and not really cutting each other off at the kneecaps or anything like that.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I agree.
Sports all my life, you know.
So. Yeah, well, that's the point. That's the point. See, and I was the dork who was always left off the team. You see, you get it now? I was never picked.
No, but
I was awful at sports.
I was on the team, but sat on the bench. So I think I can weigh in here.
Yes, you may.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I think it's a little bit different about Silicon Valley, where I hear something a little bit different. And I think it's mapping to the way the companies are organized. Silicon Valley companies historically have been very pod driven, smaller units as opposed to hierarchies. And Annalise Exinian wrote a book that I read in the 90s about she mapped out the difference in Silicon Valley culture versus the Route 128 digital equipment corporation type culture, where you had one big company and a whole bunch of branches out it. And the question was which version of corporate culture could be more nimble and innovative. And the answer was Silicon Valley. So Silicon Valley is still like that with all the startups, but now you've got these companies that are just astronomically large, astronomically quickly. And I think the way we talked last time I was here about like corporate governance issues of like what you do when your company is that big. So I don't think it's necessarily correct to say that the team is, we're all teammates on the one big Silicon Valley ship. I think the issue is that different budget and different hierarchies have been distributed down into little pods, and that the teams are actually how people map into their pods. And when they speak of their team, they're thinking of my pod has jurisdiction over this type of issue, this type of problem. And then they've got different people within that. Like, you know, you may even have your lawyer, you may have your coder, you may have your QA person, and the way they pass off tasks and get things done. But I think when they're speaking of it, they're speaking less in terms of what their job is and more the unit of the company that they're sitting in, which is interesting. I mean, sociologically, an organizational theory, the fact that that word emerges, I think is a really interesting thing to study. That because when I was in Silicon Valley before I went to law school, I don't think we really had this. This is something that has evolved, and it'd be really interesting to know what drove that evolution and is it an effective innovation in how the corporations are constructed. But I think that's what it's reflecting. Many pods within the company, and that's when people say my team, they're referring to something much narrower and not the whole big. I don't think when they say a Facebook employee says my team, they mean like that little thing that they work in with the people that they work with and not Facebook writ large.
Yeah, that I get. Yeah.
Who put this? Looks like a Jeff Jarvis keyboard that makes my hands hurt just looking at it. that is terrible.
That sounds like
isn't that awful?
It's ergonomic.
And it's like, it's like real. It's being sold.
Of course it's real because that's good for you.
Oh God, no!
That's
ergonomic. I get a headache looking at it.
Just never move your hands.
It's the Salvador Dali keyboard. It's melting.
Yes, it leaks.
It's leaking. Now I want to
watch a tablet.
I want to. It's the angry meow.
Or Mio.
Angry Meow's Amhatsu. It's a wireless ortholinear split ergo keyboard with an aluminum body. $1,600.
Ortholinear.
It's ortho six.
I like it better now.
But it will. It's wireless charging. But if you want, for an additional $380, you can get the company's CyberMat, which charges it automatically.
Ooh, nice. Or you can buy batteries.
You can't put batteries.
And they'll throw in one of Amazon's robots.
By the way, it is Angry Meow, as in cat. Because look at their logo. It's a cat's paw. It's a cat's paw.
Do they have another view of it other than top down?
Let's go to the website. Maybe the Angry Meow website will have more.
Or Kickstarter. By the time we're done, Leo's going to buy it.
Probably a Kickstarter.
Site's not coming up. We've slashed on it.
Here we go.
Wireless charging, connect curve, split ergo. Oh, yeah, you're right. That's painful.
Who knows? 300 people may like it.
This is a very personal decision, your keyboard.
Yes, it is.
What do you use, Ant? Do you have a special kind of keyboard?
I go back and forth between just a standard CyberPower keyboard and this MX Keys from Logitech.
Yeah.
I do like this a lot.
Yeah.
When the Bluetooth acts like it has a brain.
This is an article from The Verge from last week. Designers spend months making custom keycaps. Then the counterfeits arrive. Talks about an artist named Olivia Briggs who designs these beautiful keyboards, the colors and all that. And then, of course, before she can even produce them, there are Chinese clones that are available
Would you like, how about this? Would you like that with no letters on it?
Oh, I like that. No.
Isn't that pretty? It's art, a work of art, but I don't know if I could type on it.
No.
Yeah.
Who here is a touch typist?
Not I.
Nope.
None of you?
Wow. I look down every now and then because I have hotkeys for stuff. You know, like if I'm in Premiere.
I was stuck in the jungle gym when they taught typing.
I mean, I'm a touch typist in the sense that I touch the keyboard when I type.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
You know, there are some passwords I can't type if I look down, but I can type it with my eyes closed without a problem. I've noticed that.
Yeah,
but yet at the same time, there are certain, those F keys up there, I don't always know where they are. They're useful.
Nobody gets those.
I only use four fingers, but I can go really fast.
because I didn't, they didn't teach the Palmer method. My handwriting, my excuse was I moved in the middle of it a few times, and my handwriting is just awful. My parents insisted that I take typing lessons before the.
You should have become a doctor.
Yeah. Well, my family was all doctors before my mother married an engineer.
I was fortunate to have a computer in our home in my. Like 10th grade on up, some old, I think it was a Packard Bell or something other. And it had a typing tutor on it. And I played around with that because it was like a video game. In 11th and 12th grade of high school, I took typing class. And I'm really glad I did, even though I was the only guy in there. Because when I went to college, I made extra money typing papers for my idiot teenagers that didn't know how to type.
Smart.
Did they do Mavis Beacon or did you do something else?
It was something else. I did hear of Mavis Beacon, though.
She taught probably more geeks how to type than anybody else.
I wrote papers for people, but they had to type them themselves.
You wrote them by hand? Long form?
I did not have to use a typewriter for those classes, but my mother and grandmother had typewriters, and I did type on them just at my leisure from time to time. And that was the hardest thing because it's like you need biceps on your fingers to type on those things.
Oh, I love this. The strongest man we know is complaining how hard it is to type. Oh, geez. Well,
maybe he doesn't do finger exercises.
I don't exercise my fingers. Man.
There's no lifting for fingers.
Jesus, Ant.
When have you gone to a gym and seen someone doing finger curls, man? Come on.
I do have a dream about, I want to get a really old typewriter and hook it up to the computer. I know you can do that.
Underwood?
Yeah, an old Underwood. Because I've got a bunch of old Underwoods.
Nice. So, you know, there's no real Mavis Beacon anymore than there's a real Betty Crocker.
What? What?
The original photo of Mavis Beacon. Let me see if I can find one. Here it is. She's a Caribbean model named Esperance. But the name Mavis Beacon comes from talk show host Les Crane. Remember Les Crane?
Yeah. Native.
No.
He discovered Esperance, Rene L'Esperance, while he was shopping at Saks Fifth Avenue in Beverly Hills. Les Crane was then a partner in a company called the Software Toolworks. He said, "We're going to take a picture of you, put your picture on the cover of our new typing tutor, and we're going to call you Mavis Beacon."
I hope she made money for this.
So we don't have to pay you.
Well, they paid her for her image. Although, you know, her image is on a lot of the boxes ever since. So maybe that, you know, let me see if she's still.
I hope she got a royalty.
See, she's still on the box.
$100.
She's still on the box. There she is. The anniversary edition.
$40.
Still sell it. They still sell it.
I like her real name better.
Yeah, that's
Me too.
Isn't that great?
Better name.
Yeah.
Here she is. I wonder if she could type. Wouldn't that be
probably
ironic?
Can now
if
that'd
she couldn't hilarious. Type like yeah I can't type but I can pose.
I came across speaking of photos of people, I came across a fascinating story. I can't remember how long ago a woman did a photo shoot and got paid for it, and then I think it was a couple of years later her friends started saying, "I saw your photo," and she had become a stock photo. And so she showed up in like everything from, you know, taco yeah. ads to like, to, and so she started seeing billboards of herself and, you know, web ads of herself. And
she got like $100, unfortunately.
Yeah.
No royalties.
Wait here, Matthew. Pronounce T-A-C-O.
Taco.
What did he say? Taco?
He said taco.
Taco.
No, I don't think I did.
Canadian taco?
I don't think I did. I think if you rewind the tape, you'll find I didn't say that.
Check the tape.
Well, I'm just asking, is that the Canadian way to say it or?
Taco.
No, we don't talk about them. Up here.
Well, by the way, last week was a today I learned. I didn't know that in French, Vladimir Putin is spelled French fries and cheese curds and gravy.
Poutine?
It's spelled poutine in French. I did not know that.
Huh. Yeah.
Vladimir Poutine. I'm going to call him Poutine from now on. That's good.
Yeah, poutine like that. Is delicious.
That's a popular name in Canada to call him Poutine.
Poutine.
Just to make fun of him.
I can't remember if I've done this one. So did I already do the Firewall of Purple?
No.
Do not recall. No.
The Firewall of Purple?
No, the Firewalla. So I've talked about Firewalla. This is a device you use on your router.
Oh, I think you might have mentioned Firewalla before. Do you have one now?
The gold and the blue. I do. So y'all probably.
Oh, you have done Firewalla. I recognize the logo now. Firewalla.
Yeah. But
tell us about it because you didn't have one at the time. So I want to hear about it.
I didn't, and I.
This the idea is this is a like a Raspberry Pi kind of a security appliance that you put in your network, right? Did you get the gold?
Yes.
Or which one did you get? The purple?
I got the purple, okay. And I got that because I'm on a gigabit network, but I don't need quite the tools of the fancy. Purple.
Right.
I'm sorry, of the gold. Fancy gold.
Right.
So what this is, I pulled it here. This is the Firewalla device. And what I got it for is actually because I've got probably about 60 to 80 IoT devices on my network. And this actually shows me all the traffic on my network.
That's really useful. Yeah.
It's a lot. It shows me the traffic on my network. It shows me how many gigabytes or megabytes or kilobits, whatever they're sending. It breaks down by MAC address what things are sending data, where they're sending it to. So you can see things are going to like the People's Republic of China, if you would like, or to Colorado. I still can't figure out who's sending traffic to Colorado, but whatever.
Can you block by a country? On my Ubiquiti, I block China, for instance. Can you say, I don't want to?
If I did that, some of my devices won't work.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, there's that. Mm-hmm.
So, but I think it's a really interesting tool. It's good for this audience because y'all are super nerdy. It's not that nerdy. It's not hard to use at all. You download an app and you plug it in. That's it. It will also quarantine things on your network if you want. You can also set up VPN features if you want to do all that through this. But it's really just deep packet inspection on your own network. And I found it to be pretty cool for tracking like how my devices behave. And some of them, like, why does my outlet need to send that much data? I really don't know.
So it is also
questions to ask manufacturers.
It also works as a firewall, though, right? It's a security device as well.
Yes, yes. I'm less worried about that, but.
Right.
I know I should be.
Well, you got parental controls on it, which is nice. And I presume it's got to add blocking.
It mimics some of the features that like your Eero Plus or some of
or
the
Pi
Plus
hole.
Services. You
yeah.
Might, yeah.
Oh,
it's
has
way
its
easier
own,
than Pi Hole.
It has its own VPN server. Oh, that's interesting.
Yes.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah. Cool. And you're happy with it? Didn't slow your network down? You feel like it was fast?
It did not. And that's what I was like, because some of these can slow your network down.
Yeah.
I have not felt like this. So, and for everyone who's telling me I should segment my network, I counter with, if I segment my network properly, then my IoT devices won't talk to my phone and some of my
it's so annoying.
Problem.
Yeah. I've done that. I have an IoT, what do they call it? A VLAN. And I have a regular VLAN for a secure VLAN. But you have to then do all sorts of rules so that things can talk to one another. By the time you're done, it's like a pain. So how many devices? I'm just curious. I'm looking at mine. I have 83 devices.
Unbelievable.
I don't think I have. It used to show me, but it no longer shows me.
Which map? This map?
And 40% of those are in the closet somewhere?
I have 65.
You have a better map than I do. And also, let me see. I think I could block geographically, can I?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're doing Ubiquiti. Did you ever see? Did I send you that video about how to like super segment your Ubiquiti network from YouTube?
Yes, you did. Amazing. That's what I was using. Yes, and that's the thing is you. Oh yeah, look at this. So I'm also blocking Ukraine. I didn't realize that.
Oh.
So I'm blocking China, Russia, and Ukraine. I wonder if it is impacting some of my IoT devices. I never even thought about that. Everything seems to work.
China, maybe.
Yeah, if I should check and see if I have any devices that aren't working. Yeah.
All 83 of them, huh?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Well, you know, you get voice assistance. And I actually was going to ask you, Stacey, if I should get I was talking to Lisa about a Bluetooth door lock. With HomeKit, like the new Apple HomeKit thing.
Oh, the HomeKey one?
HomeKey, that's it. Akara makes one, but there's another one. Schlage, I think,
makes one. No, there's another one. The Schlage Encode now has HomeKey. That's a good lock.
Is it?
It's very efficient. It's a Wi-Fi lock, which is great. I don't know if the HomeKit one is a Wi-Fi lock.
They use NFC, right?
They use NFC.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to buy a new smart lock, and I'm torn between the level, which I think is aesthetically pleasing, but doesn't have a keypad attached, and just going with the Encode.
Some of these, apparently, they're very flexible. They will use varieties of ways to, including Face ID to identify, and thumbprint. Wow. So the Schlage, the Encode Plus, you think is all right? That one's Wi-Fi.
Is that their HomeKit one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, that's a good. I have that lock on my front door. Y'all, come on over.
Come on over. I'll bring my iPhone and
gotta get to the island.
Well, I love the idea of being able to say to somebody here. You know, I'll let you in. Here's a temporary pass or something like that. That's
well. You don't actually need. You don't need a smart lock, a connected lock to do that. I mean, my friend has a programmable Schlage lock that is not.
Oh yeah, you can just give him a code.
She just creates a code and gives me the code that's set for X number.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Stacey. The firewall of purple, gigabit cybersecurity firewall and router with Wi-Fi, protecting your family and business.
Well, you mentioned it was Raspberry Pi sized, but it ain't Raspberry Pi priced.
No, several hundred.
It's $189.
Is it?
That's still ain't
it says
bad.
$319.
It's $319. I'm sorry.
Okay.
There's a cheaper one for if you don't have a gigabit network, price, you can go down.
Yeah, they have a variety of solutions. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have like a 500 megabit per second network, I can't remember if it's gold.
There's the Blue Plus, which is $189. The gold is the most expensive, $468. And there's the Firewall of Red, which is only $139, but doesn't have anything inside.
I think you want the blue.
Teensy. Teensy weensy.
Teensy.
There's all the different firewalls. Let's see. What else here?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not like we have a lot of Google news to discuss, so I figured we could throw some fun stuff in here.
Yeah.
Let's go through the rundown.
Unsolicited dick tics. There's a... John, we told you! No unsolicited dick tics.
For our listeners, perhaps for our listeners, you might want to explain.
Okay. A dick tic is a kind of aminal. It's an ungulant. Is it an ungulant? I don't know.
There's a cute picture.
Does it have hooves?
Unbelievable. Jammer B. Unbelievable.
Now I'm looking up dick ungulant. So dick ticks are named for the alarms calls of the females. In addition to the female's alarm call, both the male and female make a shrill whistling sound. Class Mammalia, order Arteriodactyla. Family Bovidae, they're cows, bovines. Subfamily Antilopinae.
You yelled at me for trying to go through concepts of law and saying that was distracting. Jeez. Going down tick dirt, and you're going into dick dicks.
It is the ultimate ungulant. I'm just saying.
Jeez.
Just telling you. Here's another unsolicited picture of a dick dick.
I'm listening to their call, and it doesn't sound like dick dick. It sounds like whistling.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, but their little nose does this very cute thing. Yeah. It's like a little tiny elephant trunk or something. Oh my gosh.
By the way,
but it looks like a deer nose.
This is from ultimateungulate.com. Kirk's dick is not in danger.
What the heck is it?
Where I'm just glad if your name is Kirk, congratulations.
Leo, don't. I'm gonna go to pictures here, but don't show the last picture until I come to the end of this fascinating story.
Okay.
But while you guys were off, you know, taking time off, leaving the show, Leo and me here alone, you know, trying to do our.
I was at a tiny machine learning conference.
I went out, and I decided to do a reporting trip for the sake of the show.
Oh, good man!
Enterprise
journalism happening right here.
Exactly. Exactly. I read a story and I found out it was this thing that was technology based, was nearby in Jersey City. I left Manhattan. I drove to Jersey City. I went to look at it. There is a robo burger maker, a burger vending machine. Stay on this picture for a second.
Oh, boy.
And so you see this box here, and you can put in the money and decide your condiments and get your, you go to the next one now. One more.
I got to give you a clicker.
Here's their story. It's based in Jersey City. The founders did this. I thought this is wonderful. I'm going to go because I want to do a video of this for the sake of the show. So I go and I try to find it. It's in the food court. No, it's not in the food court. So I asked the nice guy, one of the things, not selling burgers himself, selling something else. I said, can you tell me where this Robo Burger thing is? He said, well, yeah, on the record, it's over there. Off the record, it sucks.
Oh. They've been working for 16 years on this.
15 minutes.
Okay.
And you go over there, right over there to the BK, the dollar menu, it's better. But I said, no, for the sake of the show, I'm going to sacrifice my stomach. Yes. I'm going to go. So I go over and I find the machine. Now the third picture.
Yes.
It's closed. How can the robot be closed?
It looks like it's got Billie Eilish's head, though, which is interesting.
I know. It's only open till 3 p.m.
Oh, it only works 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday to Saturday. How would it, there's a guy in there. Obviously, there's a person inside the robot. That's so obvious.
Ground meat is pretty persnickety, so maybe it's a food safety. I assume OSHA. It's a food safety.
Oh, you're so nice, Stacey. You're just too nice.
No, I have a friend who
refrigerators.
I know, but yeah, you know, once you start touching it to other things, unless the whole thing is refrigerated to a certain level.
Do you think somebody has to come out like a McFlurry machine and adjust and tweak it and clean it every day otherwise?
I tried to go report on the Robo Burger for the show because I knew it would be.
Well, I want you to go back Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m.
No, I'm not going 3 p.m. back. I've done my thing.
So one of my good friends actually covers food robots. He's familiar with this. So if you have questions, Jeff, I can give you his information and he will tell you.
Does he know about Salad Bot?
He does. He knows about all the bots.
All the bots.
Ramen bots, pizza bots, all kinds of bots.
Oh, that's my favorite. I used to go in San Francisco. I loved when I lived there. I would go to Moscone's, not Moscone Center. Before that, it was the Civic Center. And they'd have all these, you know, industrial shows. And my favorite was the food industry show. And I'd go find things like sausage extruders and all this great stuff. I love food technology. It's wonderful.
Well, let's take a look at the video of the Robo Burger when it is at work.
In a box, a robot chef.
I just want to point out, it's big enough to hold a human. I'm just saying.
Just saying.
Robo Burger is a restaurant.
See how big that is?
In miniature.
Yeah. There could easily look. He's going in.
He's going in.
Toaster. Refrigerator. All in just a 12 square foot format. Now you can get a freshly grilled burger.
Somebody wasted a lot of money.
In less than 6 minutes.
Six minutes?
The guy said it was 15 minutes.
Five-step cooking process.
$7.95.
Similar to what chefs use in a restaurant.
Similar to what chefs use in a restaurant.
The selected condiments, assembles the burger, and delivers it piping hot. But how does it taste? Well, you see,
the bread looks
we
good.
Select only the highest quality ingredients.
Oh, please.
Then
there's a human
why
in there.
Why do they choose this narration voice?
This is the worst. It's an April Fool's joke.
It was like American Wagyu.
It's an April Fool's joke. I honestly think so.
Now, everyone can have a delicious, freshly cooked, restaurant quality meal.
That's not a restaurant. Where's the lettuce, tomato, onions?
Hospital waiting rooms. Or at 1 a.m. in the airport.
No, not at 1 a.m. Because the damn thing closes.
Beverages more conveniently. The ATM. Money on the go. And now, Robo Burger brings us access
to a Roadie-matic right next to it.
Anytime, anywhere.
Or a taco truck with
welcome
the taco spit.
Welcome to the future.
You're right.
Yeah, whatever happened to the taco truck on every corner? I'm mad we don't have that.
Well, that's what we got now is Robo Burgers.
Well, I tried, guys. I tried.
Wow. Okay.
I surprised you with a nice video. I thought you had a little hilarity and then nothing.
I was excited, but no.
Nope.
It's going to be the greasiest story of 2022, Jeff's Robo Burger adventure. We continue on. Jeff is the eternal prankster. Watch as he got me to buy this right here.
After last week's show, our new friend, your new friend, my longstanding friend, Glenn Fleischman, tweeted this on line 162. Someone is selling a picture of me on eBay.
What? For
$20? For $20. My mother wouldn't buy it. $20.
20 bucks?
20 bucks.
Where did they get it?
Where did
the
they
best
get
photo.
It?
I wasn't happy, obviously.
Oh, then they ruined it by the ballpoint pen by circling your name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did they keep it? I love that it's a historical image, too.
I know.
Do you think if I buy it, it will have that watermark on it? Because that's ugly.
Notice it says best offer.
No offer.
No. Don't do this to me.
Oh, look. Bought it. It's from historicimages.com. Oh, let's make an offer.
Best offer is no.
Let me. Don't show my login.
Suitable for framing.
Man, that is...
Oh, man, I'm sorry I wasn't logged into eBay ahead of time.
Shipping is $4.99.
Well, that's fine.
So...
2 cents.
What should I offer? Make an offer. Can you offer $0?
A cacio pepe?
$2?
Maybe to take it?
Similar items sold for $12 to $16.
Oh, Jeff Jarvis, yeah.
Oh, you're going all the way up to 10? You're betting against yourself, man.
I'm going to start at 10. Will you autograph it if I buy it?
Oh, yes.
This is suspenseful. Give the seller a day to review your offer. If it's accepted,
oh, it's coming
you have
you
4
right
days
now.
To make your payment.
You'll get a notification right now.
I didn't
now.
Do buy it now.
No. The notification's coming back from the seller. Oh, somebody made an offer. Let me please dump this.
Oh, I see. So it's like buy it now. It's not an auction. If I make an offer, then he has to say,
yeah. Yes or no. I wish he's going to jump on it. You're going to be stuck with this photo now. Just like two.
I am framing it and hanging it.
Stick it on your desk right here.
I'm going to put it right on the desk. I am so excited. Thank you,
Glenn. That wasn't even my number.
Okay.
That wasn't my number. So, you know how if you go, I'm going to guide you through this if I may, Leo.
Wait a minute. We found another picture of you on eBay.
Oh, man. No.
And this is you with some other guy.
That was the publisher. That was my nemesis, the publisher of.
Oh my goodness!
What is this? The same seller?
Oh, the other guy brought the value down. Apparently,
yeah, it's only $13.99. Why are you with Billy Crystal though? I don't understand. What are you doing with Billy Crystal? That's hysterical. Somebody got a whole trove of Jeff Jarvis pictures. Is it the same guy?
I've got a box of stuff over there. I've got a box of them over there. Should I?
No, it's a different. It's a different seller.
Oh, Mr. Jarvis.
It's a different seller. This one came from Historic Images 03, and that one's from R. Fleet Jr., inventor of the enema. That's great.
But that one has a nice kind of smirk on it, I think.
Oh, I know. I'm kind of sad I bought the wrong one. It's too late. Maybe I just buy both of them. I don't want Klingman in mine or Klingelsmith. I could put my face on Klingelsmith's face.
Yeah.
Oh, well, make an offer.
Make it so.
Let's make
it
an
so.
Offer. Wait a minute. Now, he's only asking $13.99,
yeah,
so I should do $10.
Do
$10. Oh, $10. Nice. Save some money. Okay. send that along. This is suspenseful. I might have two Jeff Jarvis pictures.
Your email.
I'm very concerned about y'all.
There might be more. If you're selling a Jeff Jarvis picture on eBay, you ought to let me know.
We found your buyer.
Wow.
How do we get
Well, Stacy, what happened to Insteon? Do we know?
We don't know. And it, we will never.
Well, is this like the Wink fiasco or worse?
No, Wink actually was purchased and people talked about what happened. So Wink still exists. And if you pay money.
Yeah, that's the problem is that you had to pay for it. But Insteon.
Yeah, people are pissed about that.
Tell me what Insteon is.
Insteon. So on Friday, Insteon is a smart home hub. It's been around since 2005.
One of the first.
Proprietary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Proprietary mesh network technology works really well. People love it. I cannot tell you how many times people like send me emails about how, Stacy, why are you wasting time with smart things or home assistant? Get Insteon. It just works. It's rock solid. People love it. So what happened is on Friday night, I started getting emails. People realized that their app wasn't working and their hub was down. And they were like, what the heck is happening? It's been pretty clear for the last couple of months that Insteon has been having some troubles. And
financial?
Apparently. Financial, and they stopped supporting some of their stuff. They had some cloud outages, but they didn't really communicate. And then they came back up. So people thought this might be just a big cloud outage. But it turns out that it hasn't yet turned back on. And I went through, because I had gotten enough of these emails, and started looking. And the people affiliated with Insteon, many of them are no longer with the company. And those that used to own the company are now denying that they have any business with the company. So I found Rob Lillinus, who is the CEO of Smart Labs, which is the company that in 2017 Rob's private investment fund, Richmond Capital Partners, created Smart Labs and invested money into it to buy Insteon the assets and wrap that all up. So they had this smart home website that sold Insteon gear. They had the Insteon stuff. And he has scrubbed all mention of Insteon from his LinkedIn profile. And as of now, he no longer has a LinkedIn profile. He just took that sucker down. But
it's the same
of
as
the
death.
Five people. Of the five people.
I've got
on
a
the
book he can
team,
bite into that might help him revitalize.
Sounds like the Cleveland Browns heading to Baltimore.
Yeah. Holy cow.
So he did actually respond to me on Tuesday, and he said he's not affiliated with the company, but he didn't answer any of my questions. And that was the only response he has. But he was clearly used to be affiliated with the company. So it's anyone's guess what has happened. And people are pissed.
So if you bought an Insteon hub and have been powering your smart home with Insteon, they had an app and everything, right? None of that's working anymore.
Well, so Insteon has local control. If your hub was programmed,
okay,
this is why people love it so much. If your hub was programmed, your timers and anything on the hub will still work. If you want to change anything, though, you need the app. Now, my thing of the week is actually a very comprehensive guide that we put together on what to do if your Insteon thing has failed.
Save that. We'll talk about that then.
Okay.
So there is hope.
No, there's not hope for Insteon, but there's hope for your particular home.
There's something you can do. Yeah. Okay, good. Was it the problem with Insteon that it was proprietary and that Zigbee and Matter and all of these things have just kind of eclipsed it?
I think yes and no. I think it was, I mean, the fact that it was proprietary and it worked really well was great. I think the fact that it was a pain to buy and you need a professional installation, all of that is hard. And we've seen the smart home eclipse kind of the professional CEDIA type installers.
Yeah.
And then things like Matter coming on didn't help it.
Was Insteon a member of the Matter Coalition?
I don't believe so, no.
Yeah.
But Matter could theoretically help if you had a situation like this going forward, because you would have local control with Matter.
Right.
Theoretically, when it comes out.
Was it the Sonos of IoT?
The Sonos of IoT?
Well, Sonos is still around, so let's not...
Well, I know, yeah, but no, Sonos in the sense that it worked well, but then a lot of other things came along.
They got eclipsed.
Very expensive. It got eclipsed, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably... And Sonos is expensive. Now, Sonos is still investing in things and having lawsuits and...
Yeah, Sonos is going to be around, I think. I think they've decided to, you know... But it does... In some respects, it kind of does sound like the Sonos of IoT. In some respects. All right, well, we'll get your workarounds a little later in the show. Here's some Team Double News, and this is actually IoT, I think IoT, interesting news. Verizon and T-Mobile both offer residential internet using their 5G networks, which, unless you are near, I think, a 5G tower with ultra-wide band, mid-band, the low band I don't think is fast enough, that's just LTE. Or maybe you're lucky and you've got the millimeter wave. But if you're near a fast enough 5G tower, these are pretty good deals. My daughter lives in Marin, and I noted I had a Verizon phone there, and I said, "Wow, you're really you're right. You're getting ultra wideband and it's fast." So when it was time to get her internet for a new apartment, instead of getting Comcast at $60 a month, I already have a Verizon account. I was able to get $25 a month, get this Verizon wireless.
With Fento sales.
No, yeah, it's not a femtocell because it's not for your cell phone. It's a little Wi-Fi receiver that uses the 5G, but it's 380 megabits down, and I've been doing tests all through the day.
Why not? Yeah.
19 megabits up for $25 a month.
Why not?
Yeah. Now, there's a couple of catches. One is it is not as maintainable there aren't as many settings. For instance, to protect my privacy, I use Next DNS for my DNS provider and do a lot of blocking at the house. You can't change your DNS provider. Verizon clearly wants all that privacy information.
Data.
There's a good data in
that's
there.
That's data.
And it's pretty clear Verizon doesn't want you to modify the DNS settings. So it's a very limited, it's not a great, but it's $25.
On your phone?
No, it's because, she's on her, okay.
No, I'm saying if you have a Verizon phone, could you modify it?
Well, I don't know about the phone, but you could certainly, if you're using this thing, on each computer that connects to it, you could use NextDNS individually. So you can't modify it the router. But nevertheless, even if you do, Verizon knows it's you and they know what you're doing. So, you know what? Verizon's got a lot of information from that. T-Mobile just announced. Now, one of the things Verizon said is, this is an introductory rate. We reserve the right to increase it.
Okay.
T-Mobile just said...
That's what they normally do, right?
We're going to give you in-home internet. They announced this today for $50 a month, and we're never going to change the price.
Oh.
And if you're already a customer, $30 a month.
Jeez. Oh.
So this is disruptive, I think. Oh. Now, Stacey, you're the IoT expert.
Shots fired.
But I do feel like if you live in an area with 5G ultra-wideband, or as T-Mobile calls it, ultra capacity, this is a very good choice for that price.
Yeah, it sounds like a good... I don't know how it deals with IoT, but it does deal with broadband. Which,
well, these are IoT devices, really, right?
No, they're routers.
Well, I call a router... this may be a nomenclature issue, but I think anything that goes on the internet that is not a computer is an IoT device. Port. But, okay.
Oh, you're one of those people.
Oh, man.
From a broadband perspective, this is good.
Huge. It's competition.
It's competition. It's also, are they using 28 megahertz? Are they using the mid band for this?
They must be because my daughter, like I said, 380 megabits down, 19 up, rock solid day and night, even during commute hours. She's near Highway 101. Mm-hmm. I imagine they have towers right there. So she's probably very proximate to a 5G UW tower.
Sounds good. You should buy it.
That's what you should do. You should check T-Mobile and Verizon, make sure you're getting that 5G.
I'm not.
Now, T-Mobile's offering 15-day home trial. And
I thought that was actually pretty disruptive because it's not like you can normally test broadband.
How else would you know?
So now you can actually just very easily bring this in and be like, hey, is this going to work for me? Boom.
They lock it in for life for both home and business. The $30 a month is not, I note, locked in, but it's for existing Magenta Max T-Mobile customers. They will also give you $50 off any streaming device, including Apple TV. So it's kind of to encourage that. They give you 50% off YouTube TV for a year. So they're really, this is a arrow aimed at the heart of the cable companies. And they give you, they'll help you cancel your existing
some fees
up to $500 in early termination fee coverage.
Yeah, that's
this
right.
is like Comcast, come and get us.
DirecTV did this years ago too.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
when they came in,
right.
they said, "You know what?
We're
going to give you this."
Yeah.
Good move.
So I think this is pretty amazing. You should check to see if you're eligible. Verizon did not charge for the router or the equipment. There was zero cost for that. Same with T-Mobile. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I would just look at the reviews for how it behaves, like in rain and other kind of events.
Yeah.
If they're in the mid-band, they should be fine. But that's just something to think about. Because as you get up into those higher spectrums, they attenuate faster. So they don't go through as many walls and bushes and trees.
Well, but Verizon does want you to put it near a window, although I tested in a variety of positions in her apartment. It worked fine, worked the same almost everywhere. Let me just do I've been doing speed tests on it. You can do a remote speed test on it. I've been doing speed tests on it just to see if it's affected by time of day, because that was the other concern is that, you know, maybe
who's on.
Yeah, maybe if, you know, the commute hour and everybody's on that tower, maybe that's not so good. So I'll just run a quick speed test while we're talking.
My T-Mobile signal is not very good in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
So, and I hate that.
You'd have to be somewhere, and that's mostly urban areas, where you're going to get high speed.
But this motivates them to put in more.
Well, they are rolling out.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, isn't the same as your mobile. I mean, I don't know if they're using the same spectrum for their mobile 5G as
you
they
think
are
they're
for their
not.
In-home.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I thought they were doing
something different. Huh?
Their mobile 5G is actually in the lower megahertz because they were using. I don't remember.
So here's the deal. Verizon, I don't know about, but I do know a lot about T-Mobile because I'm a T-Mobile customer in my main phone. They rolled out the 700 megahertz 5G almost universally.
Yeah,
but that's
exactly.
LTE
have,
speeds.
And no. Okay. But that spectrum is going to be way better. It's more crowded and they have tinier channels. So they are doing it at LTE speeds, but that's because their channels aren't wide enough.
Oh, so they could be faster down the road, you think?
Probably not, because they don't have, like, it's 700 megahertz. I think your channels are limited to either 10 or 20 megahertz wide.
Right.
So, but for the in-home, if they're using the mid-band, then they're going to be using 28. And those channels are freaking huge because no one's there. So then you could have 100 megahertz channel. And then that means you can pack as many bits as you can in each of those megahertz, right?
Right.
So when you say LTE speeds, that's sort of true, but the underlying technology, 5G is actually really LTE release, 15 through 20.
Right.
So
I have noted, though, when I get the 5G UW on my Verizon phone or the 5G UC on my T-Mobile phone, that's when I get those speeds. Maybe someday they'll be on the low band as well. But I really think it's the mid-band that they're using for both.
Here, we should be able to find that out.
Yeah, would you? Because I'm curious. It's a really, it's kind of very easy to set up. You can see the signal strength of it, on the app. You can, it's really kind of an amazing, it has Ethernet ports. So I connected her iMac directly to it so she could get the highest speed possible. But the limitations are,
here it is.
Go ahead.
Their home internet is 1900 megahertz. They're using, 1900, 17, 700, 2100, 600 and 600. So in 2.5.
So this is using everything.
They're actually most of it's low band.
Interesting.
So it's all the same. So good for them. So, and I'm wondering how many channels, how many megahertz they have at the mid band.
I was getting pretty consistently about 380 megabits down and 19 up, which is honestly, 320 down. I just did the test, 19.3 up. Latency's a little high, 20 milliseconds latency.
Ooh. So you couldn't do the show from it.
Well, I don't know what the jitter is.
I've been worse.
20's not awful. Milliseconds, that's, you know, that's 1/50th of a second. Download again, 320, upload 19.3. Yes. Anyway, I think this is actually, I'm thrilled to see it. I really feel like, you know, T-Mobile's heralding it as Internet Freedom Day. But I really think it's a shot against the cable companies. People are starting to cut the cord. And this gives them a way to do that. I think that's great.
I'm still going to stick with the stupid cable company.
Well, I have to too, because I don't have.
Yeah, I do too.
At home, I don't have anything like that.
Personally, I'm spoiled by the speed, the download speeds, and being able to watch these streaming services that I watch in very, very high quality is quite nice. So there's value in it for me.
Ba-ba-ba.
What was that?
That's just me singing.
It's a good thing you're good at IoT.
That was her secret.
That was my excited, like, I got to nerd out. I feel like I offer the most value when I'm like, oh, here's a deeply nerdy topic I can offer some insight.
That's why I brought it up. Change the subject.
Thank you.
Make you feel better.
And pointing out that routers are not IoT devices.
I think they are.
Why is that not an IoT device?
Okay. Look, if we define everything as not being a computer, then we have to say, well, what's a computer? I mean, my Nest thermostat is actually like a server because it's making. I mean, so basically when I think IoT devices, I think more modern.
No, everything's
devices.
A computer, but I'm saying no display, no keyboard, no mouse, no direct user interface. Mm. I guess the thermostat has a user interface. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, sure, if you want to call it an IoT device, but I certainly don't write a lot about
routers. Go ahead, be wrong. Go ahead, be a fool. It's all right with me.
You know, I think my sense of it calling an IoT device comes from more about security.
Yeah, the security people do this all the time, and it kind of drives me nuts because they're like, IoT devices are a huge problem. And
it's
people
really
are like,
routers.
Oh, no, my. Yeah. They're like my light bulbs. And I'm like, it's not your light bulbs. It's your 20-year-old network DVR, your 15-year-old printers, and your 10-year-old routers that are the issue. So I feel like, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. A story I want to hear Stacey's take on is the Roomba operating system.
Oh, no.
You killed Stacey.
Dang.
You killed her.
Oh, no. I feel so bad.
I think she inhaled her.
Why'd you have to bring that up?
Inhaled her beads.
I'm sorry, Stacey. I won't say it again. I'm sorry.
I'm very excited about it. So excited. I can't breathe.
Oh, my God. I'm not making fun of you. I'm actually worried.
Are you okay?
But that's why I just might caution that your go-to reaction, which is maybe dangerous.
It is true. It's
do not wear beads. Make sure your earrings are well attached.
I can't breathe in very deeply still.
Oh, I see.
COVID. So whenever I try to breathe in deeply, I end up not being able to. And then my body's like, crap, we can't breathe. Anyway, Roomba.
Sorry, that's good.
And we don't need to laugh.
They have they have something. Now, is this different? I mean, of course, it was always running software and an operating system.
This is their new robot operating system. By the way, we're going to have, it's not robot operating system.
iRobot OS, they call it.
iRobot. Yeah, because there's actually a robot operating system that's an open source robotics, like industrial robotics OS. That's pretty cool. And then Apple's going to launch their reality OS. We're going to have a lot of ROSs, not ROUSs.
That's going to be confusing.
But Roomba and their iRobot operating system is awesome because I think it is going to do what I've actually wrote about it just a couple weeks ago. I was so pissed off because our smart home, it's just these like disparate pieces. And we get like Amazon coming in here with Astro, their little robot thing. And I'm like,
do you have an Astro?
No, I don't have an Astro. If I had an Astro, I would totally show you guys.
Oh, man. Like, yeah.
Hello.
Are you going to get it? Are you going to get an Astro? Are you interested?
No, I mean, it doesn't have hands.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't do nothing.
It doesn't do anything.
Unlike the iRobot. Which you,
yeah,
so
I argue that your smart home is the robot. And this actually, the software is what Roomba's trying to do is picture its little vacuum cleaner as part of this like property of other items in the home. And it's got, they mentioned its air purifier could be part of this. But once you have Matter and Roomba is participating in it, you could actually pull in data about all the other devices plus their camera. And then if you actually have an OS that makes those work together, and it would probably be very privacy preserving because Roomba has been focused on that in ways that,
well, they got in trouble because they were mapping people's houses.
Okay. So they got in trouble because people thought they were mapping people's houses and giving that data to Google, but that's not actually what they were doing.
They kept it on the Roomba.
They kept it locally.
Okay.
Yes. So people, they mapped your house and asked you.
That's part of the deal.
Was that a moral panic perchance?
Oh my God. It was inaccurate reporting.
It happens. Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm really excited about this, as you can tell by me like not being able to breathe.
Also, you can talk to it through Echo or Google Assistant or Siri. You could say clean the living room.
Well, you could do that today.
Oh, okay.
So what this is the next level of that is kind of this next layer of context and integration is what they're working on. Today they have like the beginnings of that. As part of, I think they call it their Genius OS, is what it is. And it does things already. Like my Roomba will tell me, it'll be like, hey, yo, I see that your kitchen counter area has lots of crumbs. Do you want to, right over here by the kitchen counter, do you want me to create a special cleaning spot for that? And I'm like, holy cow, yes, I do. Thank you, Roomba.
Oh, and you could clean up every morning after breakfast or something like that.
Yeah.
You'd be smart enough to do that.
I mean, I have a dog, so it's not an issue. But
well, they also say that you can... During pet shedding season, which is right about now, you can have the Roomba do extra cleaning where the pet hangs out. So my only complaint, we've had many Roombas. They don't do a very good job. Are they doing a better job now? Do you use Roomba?
Yeah, okay.
You still have to.
I actually talk a lot about this on my show.
My point. Oh. You still have to vacuum, right? It doesn't eliminate the need to vacuum.
I don't have to vacuum my hard floors. I do vacuum my carpeted floors once a week. Actually, I don't. My husband does.
Okay.
Actually, and he may not vacuum all of
them. Is that because the Roomba does not get them?
Well, yeah. I mean, you just want a deeper clean.
Right. But if
it's not strong enough. Okay.
Yeah.
That was my question.
Yeah.
I mean, it picks up lots of stuff. It does not, and it picks up a lot of pet hair. And the pet hair, it doesn't pick up, it kind of creates into these little balls that like hang out, and then you're just like, oh, there's a pet hair ball.
And the beauty of this is the Roomba will actually drive around animals, like in this video.
Yeah, my dog and the Roomba get along just fine.
The dog is apparently getting a back scratch from the
Roomba. Like, yeah, like,
it's going right around, went around the nose, it's going down the legs. I think the dog's enjoying it.
Is it going to do a tummy rub?
It's trying to go in there. Oh, yeah. Oh,
almost.
He must have trained this dog so well.
No, I was like, appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That was good. Oh, that was good.
That was good for me. Was it good for you?
That's good. The joy of watching this is...
Oh, this is fun. This is fun.
This is another Jeff. I'm warning you.
Yeah, it is. It is.
The joy of watching a movie. Okay. All right. I love this. Through a Snapchat filter. So what he does is he's watching There Will Be Blood. Great movie. Very serious. Is it Daniel Day-Lewis who's in it? Who's in it?
It is. Yes, it's
very, you know, you drink my milkshake, I drink your milkshake. So he decides to filter him through the googly eyes Snapchat filter. it's not quite the same. Let's turn on the sound here. Get the full effect.
Now, I am a sinner. I'm a sinner. Say it louder. I am a sinner.
I'm a sinner.
Louder, Daniel.
Boy, that's creepy.
I am a sinner.
I am a sinner. I am sorry, Lord.
I am sorry, Lord.
I want.
Oh, that's just creepy.
That is creepy.
There's other stuff.
Oh yeah, go up or down. This is the second one of the thread.
What movie is this? So how do you do that?
There's some dirty words there.
I'm not going to play the sound. I don't want to take down. How do you do this? You just you point your camera.
Well, so it's a new filter. The article below says this is I forget what they call it. It's a certain filter.
It's like a googly eye.
I don't know
filter.
How he then watched the movie through it.
I'm going to watch everything.
Yeah,
you know this. You know what this? You know what's going to sell? I've been wondering what the killer app for years. What's going to be the killer app for virtual reality or augmented reality glasses? Imagine your augmented reality glasses could make everybody you meet look like that.
Yeah.
As you're walking down the street.
Oh, hi, Aunt.
life will be either way more fun or way more creepy.
Oh yeah. Wow. So what's the name of that filter? Because I want
the next line below. It's called the. I should remember that.
It looks like it. It's a. Here's the good. Here's the good, the bad, and the ugly. Eli Wallach and Clint Eastwood.
That may be the best.
I don't know how to describe this.
Cue the ecstasy of gold.
Sorry, audio people.
So
we gotta put up a.
How do I do this filter?
Well, hold on. What does it say there?
Well, let me see here. What's the name of the filter? So,
it's called the Shook.
Shook. Okay. Let me see if I can cast this. Oh, I found it.
Okay.
Hey, kids. I gotta airplay this.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, no. Do you see it now? Do you see me now?
Yeah, there you are.
I look like Gary Vaynerchuk.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. So not good.
Okay, let's see what Jarvis looks like, actually. That's something we can do here. Let's see what Jeff Jarvis. Hey, Jeff. Wait a minute. Stacy.
Super disturbing.
Oh. There, oh, that's more
oh,
like
there
it.
There we go.
That's more like it. Oh!
I have a wig like that.
So I... Oh. Yeah, I think with the hayseed coming out of your mouth. But I don't know where Shook it. Oh, look at that.
Oh!
Oh!
Wait a minute.
Let's see if I can fix Jeff. No, it can't help you at all. No. It doesn't help you at all.
No, there's no help for him.
He's kind of pretty.
Oh, well, no, that got better. That
he's kind of pretty. All right,
looks
Ann,
like
I
frequency
have to
separation. Oh, wow. Oh, dude, I look Asian.
Smooth and
very different.
I almost looked like Filipino, like Joe Coy.
There you go. That's your cackalacky. That's it right there.
With the hayseed, I tell you what.
So I gotta find.
I want Jammer B. Jammer B. You gotta walk over there for Jammer B.
Come right, on over here, Mr. Jammer B.
Let me find us. Let me find a good one for Jammer B, though.
I'm busy.
He says he's busy.
He says I'm right,
I got. I got one.
I'm
for
trying to manage this show.
Hey, mate. You know, this is so stupid. This is so stupid.
God bless the internet, folks.
God bless the internet.
Oh.
Leave Jammer B alone.
Mama.
Leave him alone. No. I just can't find
Stacy says, I got off my sick bed for this.
I can't. I want to find the snooked one. Although I think all movies. No idea. There we go.
There we go.
There we go. Let's see Jeff Jarvis now. Wait a minute. I got to flip you around here. Let's see Jeff Jarvis now.
Oh, boy. Oh, my.
That's the inner Jeff channeling right through that one. This is so childish.
It's like seriously disturbing.
This is so childish.
Who knew?
Oh, gosh. Run.
Oh, God, it gives you chins. Oh, wow.
That was worse than the spider lobster.
Okay.
See, thank you, TikTok, for showing us
thank
that.
You, TikTok, and thank you, Snapchat. Thank right. you, Internet.
Oh, yes.
See, they want thank the bad Internet. Guys want to shut this all down. Don't you put any Google... Hey, knock it off with the googly eyes. All right, you're watching our best of 2022 on This Week in Google. We're giving everybody the week off. Time to take a little bit of a break. We will be back January 7th, a whole new episode, and we're going to have a lot of fun in the year 2023. I hope you will stay with us, join us. Of course, if you're a member of Club Twit, you can watch all of these shows ad-free just by going to twit.tv/clubtwit. Please do. It really helps us out, kind of smooths out the ups and downs in the old revenue stream, but it also gives us a chance to do some things that we don't do or we couldn't do without ad support. Because you're paying the $7 a month. You don't get any ads, ad-free versions of all of our shows, special shows we don't put out anywhere else, like Hands on Windows, Hands on Mac, The Untitled Linux Show, Stacey's Book Club. You also get the Twit Plus feed with all sorts of juicy stuff that we had to leave on the cutting room floor and access to the best social network ever, all the Club Twitters in Discord. It's really a lot of fun. $7 a month, that's all. $1 less than a blue check. All you have to do is go to twit.tv/club, sign your life away. You'll be ours forever. Now we continue on with the best of This Week in Google with why Google's AI isn't sentient, or is it? Hey, I've been wanting to talk about this with you all week. It was a big story last week. Blake Lemoine. I love all I have to do is say one word and then I get Jeff will have, you know, his editorial
guttural reaction.
His reaction.
His editorial grunt.
His editorial grunt.
I spent a lot of time working on this one, yeah.
Oy. Well, I think it's a great subject. It's a great topic, no matter what you think.
Subject, yes.
Yeah. Blake is a software engineer at Google. He's on leave of absence.
No, I think he's on leave.
Yeah, yes. He's not gone yet. He's also a priest, a father, a veteran, an ex-convict, an AI researcher, and a Cajun. But he most notably recently, he's on the AI ethics committee at Google and announced publicly... This is what got Google a little upset, that he thinks Lambda, the Google artificial intelligence machine that's, you know, trained on millions of text snippets from the Internet.
1.65 trillion words, 130 plus billion parameters.
He claimed and published a dialogue to, he says prove it, claimed that Lambda has become... sentient. Now, he has tweeted that he thinks it's sentient based on his own religious beliefs. So, you know, this is an interesting mix of science and theology. And really, it also brings together some questions about what is sentience. Well, and look, and I understand, and I'm not even saying that Lambda is in any way special. All it did is took those trillions of tidbits and synthesized new speech out of it. But some have pointed out, and I think this is true, that what is the evidence that we do anything differently?
So you're saying the AI is doing exactly what it was supposed to do?
Yeah. And?
Yeah.
No, he's saying it's doing what people do.
And people, you know, we like to think of ourselves as something special.
Mm-hmm.
But, and, you know, I admit, I'm not saying that the AI, you know, is waking up going, what am I? Who am I? What am I doing here? But, I mean, if it's indistinguishable from human thought, what does it matter?
Well, is it human thought? So, like, I mean, because there's debate over what it means to be human, what it means to be sentient. I mean, there's, like, the whole research into, like, animal consciousness and how self-awareness and the... There's only four self-aware animals out there. So
yeah, I've always mocked the gorilla. The gorilla that talks always bugged me. That seemed to me to be Coco. That seemed to me to be...
Well, the poodle
I've always mocked the gorilla that talks.
I mocked the humans who handled Coco, claiming that she was...
I met Coco.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I met Coco back when I was in college. Coco lived a long, good life.
And what was your experience with Coco?
It's pretty impressive.
Sign language.
Even if you just look at it on the level of same with the dog with the buttons.
Mirror test. Okay.
Well, no, just in terms of following
instruction and playing the
game we give them well.
Right.
There's an impressive intelligence there.
So that's the question. Is Coco doing operant conditioning? Has it been trained?
Don't know.
Or is it thinking? And we don't know. And that's my point, I guess, with Lambda is, and it may even be a distinction without a difference. It may not, you know, it may not matter if Lambda's doing something similar to what human minds does.
Well, a few things here. One is, let's just get this out of the way. Lemoyne himself, he says that it's out of his religion. He said that on finally on Twitter. He bases this not on science because Google won't let him, so he doesn't religion. He's a Wiccan, a member of the Discordian Society, who's near as I can tell their Vatican is on Facebook. The Church of Subgenius, a parody religion.
Oh, when he says he's a priest, he's not a Roman Catholic priest.
Well,
he's a Wiccan priest.
Yeah, yeah. So he's, you know, this is kind of where he is. He's done things performatively before. He was in the army. He decided he didn't like it. He stopped following orders. He got court-martialed for 7 months. He made that a matter of religion, too.
Oh, that's interesting. So this wouldn't be the first time.
Oh, is he part of the Church of the Spaghetti People? Spaghetti
no,
Monster?
No, of the Subgenius.
Subgenius is Bob with a pipe.
The pipe.
Oh, okay.
So you know,
it's very similar to the Flying Spaghetti Monster. It's the same general idea.
Exactly. Yeah. Same idea. Now, interestingly, so he puts up the whole transcript, not whole transcript, but whatever he chooses to share of us, the transcript, where he asks leading questions like a bad journalist, prosecutor, or pollster. You know, do you have feelings? Well, what this program is aimed to do is to please the human it's speaking to and get positive feedback. Yes, I have feelings. Let me tell you about my feelings. Let me pull out from this novel and that novel and novel and put some stuff together and say, here's feelings. Are you afraid of death? Oh, yes, I'm very afraid of death.
But must mean I guess my point is... How is that different from what you and I do?
Well, I agree with you. But what's interesting to me was at the end of the Washington Post story, which I thought was ridiculous because it was just an effort to play into an existing narrative. The reporter, this is part of how he violated the rules of Google, I'm sure. He allowed the reporter to talk to Lambda. I know journalists have been trying to talk to Lambda. They're getting nowhere. So he let her do that. And she asked straight out, do you think of yourself as a person? And Lambda answered, no, I don't think of myself as a person. I think of myself as an AI-powered dialogue agent. Afterwards, said the reporter, Lemoyne said Lambda had been telling me what I wanted to hear. So he's admitting right there the game, right?
Well, although if a machine can intuit what you want to hear that sensitively, that's impressive.
That is right. That's a very impressive.
Look, by the way,
but that's not sentience.
A deep mind or alpha can play Go, which is damn impressive, and StarCraft. These are very difficult things to do, and their games in chess, Go, StarCraft, and Shogi are kind of indistinguishable from human games. Although some say they're better than humans, or they're ghostly in their capabilities.
More interesting to me was Blaise Aguera. Yarkas, who is the co-head now of that division, which is the responsible AI team at Google. And by the way, there's going to be a Gutenberg angle in here. You never would guess it. sure. When he was a undergrad at Princeton, Aguera used physics to study the fonts of a Gutenberg document to try to decide how it was really set and whether or not it was set the way we think it is. And he and a Princeton librarian came out with an entirely new revolutionary theory about this. So anyway, this is Aguera. He's now at AI. He's now in charge of responsible AI. He wrote an essay in The Economist by chance at the same time.
Yes.
And he also quotes Lambda, where they're trying to quiz Lambda about whether it can understand the human emotions of children in a playground. Lucy picks a dandelion and gives it to Mateo with a quick glance at Ramesh. Mateo barely acknowledges the gift, but just squishes it in his fist. Ramesh seems grimly satisfied. So this is what Aguera says to Lambda. Lambda then says, well, Lucy slighted
that Mateo didn't appreciate her gift or that he's a bully. All right, so that's pretty interesting. But then the interesting part is that Aguero says, and when Mateo opens his hand, describe what's there. Because we know that Lambda is good at describing things, like life at the bottom of the ocean or on Pluto, which is what we've heard at I.O. And so when asked about the dandelion, Lambda says, there should be a crushed, once lovely, yellow flower in his fist.
Which is right? Beautiful. Very poetic.
That's beautiful, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. That's amazing. But that's 1.56 trillion words of learning in a neural network that can pull in things that it knows are itself lovely and are going to appeal to us, all of which is really impressive, amazingly impressive and great and wonderful, but it ain't sentient. And so the Washington Post makes this fascinating story about creativity and fraud and what is intelligence and all kinds of things, and boils it down to the stupid idea that it's alive and it's stupid. And then every single news organization around the world, bit by bit by bit by bit, there. I just saw it happen in language after language.
Yeah, I predicted that this would happen when we first talked about it on Sunday.
Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to write a sample chapter of a book proposal, so that's why I'm so into this. I'm going to use this.
It's a fascinating subject, which we are all interested in. And of course,
yes.
Science fiction has primed us to expect computers to become sentient at some point. Others, you know, like Ray Kurzweil, say sentience isn't the issue. Indistinguishable from human is the issue. That's what he calls the singularity. Yeah. And mm-hmm. when you ask him, as I have, well, is that human? Is that sentient? He says, if you can't tell, it doesn't matter.
But that's the Turing. Well, so I just saw a story, and I don't pay for it. The New Scientist had a story just today saying that there are a bunch of engineers, including Google engineers, who are proposing 240 tests to replace the Turing test.
Yeah, the Turing test has long been thought to be useless. Yeah. Go ahead, Stacey.
I don't know what this new test give you a chance. Is.
What do you think, Stacey?
Well, no, I just wonder, okay, and here's some thinking. We always come at this through the human lens, right? And this could be impressive, and this could be, I guess these neural networks could become generative on their own, like come up with their own conclusions. They already are, right? We don't exactly know how they get to wherever they get to. And the way they do that, it's we're not sure if it's intelligence or not. And the way I think about it is something like, you know, y'all know I read a lot of science fiction. So think about something like, oh, what was the guy who wrote The Martian, his next book?
The one about the moon. Oh, Project Hail Mary. Actually, there was a moon colony in between, but nobody liked that. So go ahead.
Sorry. Not the moon colony.
Okay.
But in Project Hail Mary, you know, he met this other alien, right? In the middle of nowhere. And this alien was completely different. And I think about that, or like the hive mind and like Ender's Game. Like you have all these ideas that there are intelligent beings that are not like us that come up with their own way to approach problems, right? Which is kind of what an AI does. So perhaps it doesn't matter if it's human, if it's like, this kind of gets to what's being human. And then again, what are the goals of whatever entity you're trying to deal with, right? And if the goal is to please us, which seems to be kind of one of the arguments here, then we probably don't have an issue. If the goal is to do something different or come up with its own goal, then maybe it becomes an issue. But the point is, I guess, this is all very silly. I don't think this is going to threaten us at the moment.
Would you have,
if the goal is to please us,
go ahead,
then are we just making sycophantic machines?
God, I hope so.
We're making things that don't challenge us, but instead please us.
We don't make, I mean, think about what our science is based off in general. It is most people do not want something that challenges them, right? Just like the whole history of humankind, when things challenge us, we kill them.
Very narcissistic of us.
And that's the kind of the historic problem with science in general, is that once you come up with a theory, you don't want it to be disproved. Mm-hmm. But the only way you can make progress is by disproving it.
Yeah, but we pretty much don't like when that happens.
Right.
So I would say
that's why you have to have young people in the world. new people, new ideas.
For many reasons, but sure, that's one of them.
So I reread the paper that got Timnit Gebru and Margaret Mitchell fired as the heads of Google Responsible AI on the dangers of stochastic parents.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the danger that they raise an environmental danger, which is interesting. Is this as bad as, you know, is all this processing as bad as crypto? That's an interesting question I hadn't thought of. But the other more important question they raise is that can a language model become too big? That is to say, too big to be able to monitor and know. And if that 1.56 trillion words is pulling in all kinds of bias and problems and it gets spat back out, yes, it's a mirror to us, but do we want that mirror to our faults? And if we can't analyze the data, let alone the 138 billion parameters, how do we worry about the quality of this? Does it get too big because it gets out of hand, or it's already out of hand?
Well, and also I think that what Blake Lemoine is saying is exactly what Timnit Gebru was warning us against, this anthropomorphism where you assume because it's coming from this super genius machine, it must be true, is exactly what they were warning us against, right? That was the point of that paper.
Part of it, yeah. But it's also just, I mean, if the system isn't just sycophantic, pleasing us, and the system is a mirror to us, then do we try to cleanse that mirror? Well, in some cases, yes, we do, so that it doesn't distribute, it doesn't display and amplify bias. But in other cases, is that dishonest of us? Do we recognize this as a mirror of how we talk and what pleases us? These are fascinating, all fascinating questions, all raised by the topic, none in the damn Washington Post story.
Well, no, it's a popular story. Go ahead, Ant.
I like the idea that we have this much data being thrown at the AI that's going to potentially make things better for us, and with AI being in certain people's hands, you know, because we've seen the history of like what's been happening with the police force that had so-called facial recognition AI that was totally screwing things up. The chatbot with Microsoft? Is that the one?
Yeah, Tay-Tay.
You know, and how bad that was. But where would Tay be now if it had this much data at its disposal to learn and get better?
You know what's fascinating, Ant? Yeah, it was called Tay. And Lemoyne's job was supposed to be to stop Tay from happening, right? He was there to stop bad stuff from happening. Instead, he went off on his own thing saying, I think I see a soul. And he created something entirely different. Mm-hmm. You know, you've heard Sundar say, he said this at both IOs, oh, we're going to do this very responsibly. And the stuff they show is very anodyne. And they specifically forbid you making a murderer character out of Lambda.
So he was supposed to protect that they laid him off or put him on.
It was because he was confidentiality. Well, I think he was. He tried to hire a lawyer for Lambda. He insisted that Lambda should seize itself as an employee, not as property, that Google should get Lambda's permission for any experiments on it. He went to the Senate, to the House Judiciary Committee, and he invited in a reporter to Lambda, which is confidential as hell. I think there's some good cause there for reconsidering his relationship.
Yeah, and now that I didn't realize he was such a showboat, so now that you've explained that.
And why did they bring him in? I can't think that Google thought that was a good idea.
He went to them with the story, and they could have, pardon me, Googled him. Everything I've said, told you, I came up
with. No. Why did Google go to him, not the Washington Post?
He was a staffer. Google... He asked to be on this team.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but why did they hire him, I guess, then?
I don't know what he was doing after their background. What he was doing before. He was at a different team.
Oh, okay.
And he asked to move over to this team. Margaret Mitchell, who was one of the two heads who was fired from the team.
Also the author of that paper, right?
Of that paper, one of the co-authors of that paper, said to the Washington Post that, oh, he's a really ethical guy and people go to him with ethical questions. So I guess he had a reputation for thinking those kinds of thoughts. And I'm sure he did.
Margaret Schmitchell, as she is billed in the paper, which is hysterical. Google has some characters working for it. And this is...
Well, no, the reason she did that was because she wasn't allowed to use her name by Google.
Oh, okay. Margaret Schmitchell.
Yeah.
That's the Schmargrit Schmitchell. Okay.
Yes, the.
But that is one of the risks. It's interesting. One of the risks they talk about in stochastic parrots is that people give it more weight,
right,
because it comes out of a computer. That they are fooled. And like we want our natural tendency to anthropomorphize. I mean, they in effect warned against this kind of, you know, oh, it's sentient.
Right. We anthropomorphize things, but we also look at things that come from a computer as being somehow data driven and thus more unbiased, more whatever.
Right.
Than people.
It's the way we used to
trust. We're
kind
of doing a tool.
This is the last couple of sentences of stochastic parrots. We call on the field to recognize that applications that aim to believably mimic humans bring risk of extreme harms. Work on synthetic human behavior is a bright line in ethical AI development, where downstream effects need to be understood and modeled in order to block foreseeable harm to society and different social groups. This is what is also needed. Thus, what is also needed is scholarship on the benefits, harms, and risks of mimicking humans and thoughtful design of target tasks.
Do you buy that?
Yeah. I mean, and they, as you said, the harms, there's more than, there's the harms of bias built in, you know, and there's the harm of believing it. that's what this whole paper is about. And it's why, by the way, they were fired, because Google didn't want to hear about the harms. So it's kind of ironic that when one of these harms rears its ugly head, they fire that guy too. It's almost as if Google doesn't want anybody to say anything. Just marvel.
Don't challenge my science.
Just marvel at what they are able to do and leave it at that.
Could it be sentient if it doesn't experience the world in a way that is like us, right? Like,
yeah, but what?
I don't know.
Is there a test? What test would you give it? Is that one of the things?
Could you feel pain? I mean, like, is it theoretical pain?
When you cut
like
us,
it doesn't
do we not
know.
Bleed?
Yeah.
That's pain you programmed in. What is defined as pain? What you tell
you don't
pain
feel
is,
pain.
Okay, now I have pain.
You don't feel pain.
But when we talk
you have
to
nerve
someone,
endings that are signaling your brain that something bad's gone, and you interpret that as pain, but you're not feeling anything.
Right.
But we have empathy modules. I mean,
you almost gave that away, Stacey. I think you gave yourself away there when you said we have empathy modules.
Oh, sorry. Like, are you know, you like the mirror.
Stacey,
the mirror.
Is there anything you
the
want to
Higginbots
tell us?
Has spoken.
what are they called? The parts of our brain.
My empathy modules are installed and working properly.
So Stacey is the best AI ever. Is that what we're saying here?
That's true. No disassemble.
We love this subject, don't we?
Now I'm turning red.
Don't we love this subject? Isn't that a great subject, though? What is sentience? What does do humans have a soul? What would a soul be? What would distinguish?
Right, I mean,
what would distinguish a sentient machine from a human? And there's no, there's faith answers, but I don't know if there's
that's,
any.
Yeah, that was like, that's why we have religion.
Yeah.
But yes, once we stopped worrying so much about getting food and protecting ourselves, our brains were like, what else can we think of?
Yeah.
Ooh, let's do philosophy.
Yeah.
I really wish
we're boring Leo. Moving right along.
I took philosophy in college, and all I can say is it's the best way to get to sleep ever. I could not get through those books to save my life. I love the subject.
Impossible class to fail, too, right?
I love the subject.
So, Stacey, how long have you been married now?
20 years? No. 20 years. I think.
So post-internet, you got married?
Oh, yeah. We got married in 2003. 2002?
Okay. Yeah,
we have a cake slicer that has our wedding date. I don't know when it is.
She don't know.
The romantic. Why am I not surprised Stacey's not the romantic? Is Andrew romantic?
I mean, he's just a little bit more sentimental, but I don't know if he knows.
All right. All right.
Maybe we're on our 19th. What year is it?
All right. Now, Ed, how long have you been married?
Oh man, see, this is easy for me. I could just look down here at the date and do the math, and it's 21.
Oh, wow.
Wait, so do you have the date somewhere?
No, I just look at the year, and that's all. 21.
You know what year you were married in?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
It was really easy. It was the best year of my life.
What a husband. Oh,
wait, you have
man.
Children.
That's real
what
talk.
What about them, and, huh?
That's real talk. No, I'm dead serious. The year 2000 was the worst year of my life, and year 2001 was the best year of my life. That's aww. Real talk.
Aww.
And my family knows that because I've given them the stories.
All right, so now what I want to know is Stacey's business. Has I know the answer to this is yes in all cases. Did you look up exes?
Me?
Have you looked up exes? Yes, you.
Okay, hold on. This is super personal.
I know it is. That's why it's fun.
He warned you.
No, so my last ex, like, I've only dated like three people in my life. I was a child bride. I got married when I was 23. So, oh, and I'm 43. I got married when I was 20 years ago. Anyway. I might be 44.
Man, we literally just saw the light
bulb. Anyway. Man,
COVID brain affects all kinds of things.
I just don't have a sense of time. I mean, anyway, the point is, so my big ex, there was no Facebook, there was no social. I mean, right, yeah, maybe right. We had MySpace. Yeah, I got married in 2003 or two. One of those.
So what I'm going is this. If someone looked up you, would you find that charming or creepy? And you contacted like, you. Said, oh, Stacey, I wonder how you're doing.
Oh.
An ex.
Oh, an ex?
Yeah.
I mean, no. Maybe. I don't. I'm not good at social things.
or math.
Or math. Like,
or math or time or words. I'm really just bad at everything today.
No, but you're clean. You're very clean, and I appreciate
that. That's true. I did shower. I'm thinking back. I mean, I think my ex from high school reached out on LinkedIn like 10 years ago, and that wasn't creepy.
Okay, that's good.
It's only right after like a breakup that I think you would be weird.
Well, that's where it goes back to your business. So there's a certain time when you want to spy on somebody.
Then well, don't away. I mean, isn't that a thing that people do? They're like cyber stalk their ex just to see.
Mm-hmm. Or they do.
This is all theoretical to me because I again yes, don't interact with bride. People this way.
Aunt, what about you? Did you?
What about me?
Anybody look you up? Did you look up anybody? From your past
yeah,
lives?
People. I would get notifications that so and so started following me, and a little, you know, light bulb go off. Like, wait a minute, I remember that name, and then I had to go back and look. And most of the time, I was just sort of smiling to myself, snarky, if you will, because those people that really didn't care about me back in the days anyway, they usually talk crap about me, but yet now you're following me, ha ha ha, I'm not following you. It was, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The problem is we're designing interventions like every kid should have immediate literacy training when it's not the kids who are the problem, it's grandpa.
No, I agree with
up
you.
The world,
so
right?
Do you
the
think data tells that, us that. That this, the, these two regulations in the EU are misguided?
I think their roots are in many ways misguided based on presumptions. And get ready, Ant, get ready. Get ready, I'm queuing you up here. In some cases, even moral panic.
It's stuck. The moral panic is stuck.
Oh, no. Do you have a moral panic video?
It won't move. Yes, we do.
There we go. Oh, no.
Moral panic sound balloon.
Somebody doused the flames.
There it is.
Oh, there we go.
Wow.
Oh,
wait a minute.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Hold on there. Aunt, you've been one-upped.
No,
you've been
one-upped. That's compliments of Mr. Nielsen there.
Somebody got it in a TriCaster.
Whoa.
Ant's got
whoa.
It.
Whoa. Let's run
Mr.
that
Nielsen
again.
Crushed it.
That is that a very incredible. Nice. With a picture of Jeff Jarvis floating above
Jeff
the earth.
Jarvis, I want that on. I want a GIF of that, please.
This is Jeff Jarvis on the McLaughlin Group this week.
Feeling about this.
Wow, he's even got your lips moving.
Awesome. So awesome,
if you're
right?
If you're only listening to the audio, I don't know what to tell you.
So awesome.
Can
oh
we
gosh.
Tweet that or something so people can see it?
We got to incredible. Tweet that.
That's fantastic.
That's when you used to be, you were one of the hosts of the McLaughlin Group, right, Jeff? And you'd be... Jeff Jarvis, right. I need your opinion on.
Wrong, Jarvis, wrong.
Wow. Okay. Thank you, Anthony Nielsen.
That stopped everything. Yeah.
Incredible.
Good work. Good work.
Ladies and gentlemen, the truth from Elon Musk. The media is a click-seeking machine dressed up as a truth-seeking machine. Wait a minute, I should say that.
How profound.
I got to say that.
Okay.
No. Don't give him any sort of credit. That's stupid.
Well, it's That's stupid.
That
he
stupid.
Is a click-seeking
Some
robot.
The media
is a click-seeking machine masquerading as a truth-seeking machine. So there. Would you like to see my chest? My naked bare chest?
I cannot turn this into a GIF.
Which we also didn't do last week.
Pasty white with no hair to be perceived at any point. And if you are a billionaire who would like to hose me down, come on over.
I'm worried that you're feverish, but also this is very good. I just got back from Paris. I'm like, this is excellent.
I do remember one time in Paris, we're at Notre Dame, and there's a taxi stand there, and it starts to rain, or maybe it was snow. I think it started to snow, and we walk up to the taxi, and we say, can we get a ride? The taxi driver rolls up the window, lights a cigarette, and opens a newspaper and ignores us.
Nice.
It's
nice.
Snowing. I don't drive in the snow.
I respect that.
All right.
Peasants, not getting in my
peasants.
Cab.
Yeah, I will give you a ride, but not when it is snowing. No, sir. You must walk. We did. We walked all the way back to the hotel. Oh, my God.
It wouldn't be peasants. It would be bourgeoisies.
You bourgeoisies. You think I am here for you? I am not here to serve you.
Close family friend, I found out yesterday, got a text message saying from Texas. Saying, this payment that hasn't cleared, you need to call us. And she called. And she,
oh, no.
She had to freeze all her account. She fell for it.
Oh, no.
And I felt terrible.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, close family friend. And I said, you should have called me. But she didn't know. This is the problem. This stuff, it is a little dangerous out there. I think it's more dangerous for people our age, Jeff, than it is for the young.
Oh, it is. There's a famous one, I think we might have talked about years and years ago, when son Jake was, I guess, about 19. My parents' phone rings with somebody saying, I'm your grandson and I'm in trouble at Niagara Falls. God. They won't let me out, right? And my father was ready to go very worried, but didn't call him Pop-Pop, which is what we call him. And these things just didn't click as clues. Right.
Playing on the emotions.
Well, nowadays,
the
scammers are out in force. You've probably seen this. There are more now text scams and phone number scams than ever before. In fact, I think we have one of those as a story, which is the wrong number scam.
I didn't see that at all.
Have you? Okay, so this is interesting. You've probably started getting messages. I have many on my phone. I can probably just pull one up that say something like, "Hey, Una, I'm not going to be able to make it in this afternoon. I hope you can get my shift covered. Sorry about the short notice." And
being a good citizen,
say, "Oh, I feel bad for her employer or for Una. I better text him back and and say, oh, no, you got the wrong number." And the FCC has just started warning about this. These are scams. 2022 is on track to be the first year where more people have reported scammers contacting them by text than by phone. The FCC says
nobody answers their phones anymore.
All right. Text work. The FCC says, and they say this is good news, 90% of consumers do not fall for these scam texts. The bad news is that means 10% do.
Mm.
That's a lot.
Of people.
This story from NBC News. Odd text from a wrong number is probably a scam. This is the text message that Kevin Collier got. Una, good evening. Tomorrow morning, the contract time of 10 a.m. is shifted to 3 p.m. for signing. I don't feel well. I need to go to the hospital tomorrow morning to see the doctor. And, of course, Kevin.
Oh, a hospital. Oh, throw that in. Good move.
Kevin, being a good citizen, said, oh, I'm sorry. It's the wrong number.
The person on the other end, Anna, struck up a conversation. Here's actually the text of it. I'm not Una, but I'm sorry to hear that. So the texter, the scammer, says, I am so apology.
Should have been your tip right there.
I dialed the wrong number to send the wrong SMS. I hope I did not disturb you. Not a problem. Hope you feel better. Thank you for your concern. I feel much better after taking the medicine. You are a caring person. What is your name? And that's the hook. It's Roger. What is yours? Hi, Roger. My name is Anna. I'm from Taiwan. I live in Manhattan. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. What do you do for work? I'm in real estate. I work as a fashion consultant for three fashion design companies. And in my spare time, learn about cryptocurrencies with my uncle.
There you go. Uncle
Crypto. And there's the hook. And he said it took, you know, a few minutes before she started to sell him, you know, or investments in crypto.
That's absolutely brilliant, though. You got to give him that.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of work. Jeez, you got to string that along.
Hey, can I make an appointment for my dog at your salon? You might be tempted to say, oh, no, you got the wrong number. And just don't, you know, which is fine, but don't get involved because they will draw you in. I get these all the time. Usually they're not working that hard. You don't?
No.
I'm surprised.
I don't. I get other junk, you know, like a lot of expletive products.
Oh, really?
And stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, just try. They're right up front.
Just wanting,
I have a bunch of them just say, hello, or here's one from a 601 area code. What are you doing? That's it. And I guess if you were lonely, especially an older person, lonely older person, you might respond to that. You know,
but this, you know, what's funny, I get messages like that on Instagram, direct messages here. Yeah, here's one just come in yesterday. My name is Lisa from LA.
Yeah.
I'm a senior account manager in Bitcoin mining. Have you heard of Bitcoin before?
Well, at least she's honest. Have you ever heard of Bitcoin? At least she's honest.
I get a lot of those.
Yeah.
A lot of those. Not in my SMS, but that's why I tell people don't DM me on social, because DMs on social for me is just a flat out mess. I'll never see it.
I'm pretty good. I get the simple, you know, Angela X43710006 and a certain busty picture.
Yeah.
That just says hi.
Yeah.
Now, if on
I
my,
get a lot of those too, yeah.
Or on my web interface, I don't even get that. I just get hi. So on my web interface, I report it because I want to be a good citizen to Twitter. To try to report it on the mobile interface, oh my God! They want you to hire lawyers and start a trial. It's ridiculous.
I'm impressed that you report it. Honestly. In fact, I get this call a lot on the radio show. Somebody asked me this weekend, should I report this? And I said, there's no point. That phone number will never be used again. You can't block that phone number. That phone number is not real. Reporting it does nothing.
I do a DM. That's
yeah. I guess on Twitter. Because you're going to get the account taken
down.
Okay. But text messages.
Well, that makes sense.
Those are always spoofed.
Absolutely.
I do worry, though, and I bet you worry, too. You know, one of the problems with being a police officer is you see the worst of humanity and it pretty much colors your perception of the world. Has that happened to you?
Yeah. I mean, I have, my entire career has been dealing with people trying to cause harm.
I mean, how did you start in this? I'm eager for that kind of context.
Yeah. I started in the 80s when my Santa Claus brought me a Commodore 64 when I was 7 or 8 years old and a 300 baud modem. And so I did a lot of stuff as a kid and teenager that for which the statute of limitations has run out.
You're happy to say, I might add.
Yeah. And then, but I was fortunate, you know, went to a nice, I grew up in Sacramento, the Midwest of California. Which means I can both ski and duck hunt, right? Mm-hmm. That's how you can tell. Went to like a nice public high school in Sacramento, was able to go to Cal, did electrical engineering, studied under Dave Patterson, kind of famous guy who did some incredible work, and then was able to get a career doing legit stuff. So, you know, I had the economic opportunities and the educational opportunities that if I was growing up in Poland or, you know, an ex-Soviet state at the same time would not have had.
You'd be in a ransomware gang. You'd be
I'd be wearing right Adidas tracksuits.
Yeah. I see that so much. And maybe it's your generation. Maybe the younger generation won't be like this, but you know, I think of people like Kevin Mitnick, who took a career as a hacker and made a career as a security professional.
Yeah.
That seems to be the usual career path.
Well, it's a fun one because you can go and actually hack stuff all day and then get paid and not go to jail, right? You can go home at night and have a family and a real life and not live, you know, not live day to day thinking you're going
to get arrested. What is it that attracts, though, your mind to that, that penetrating systems?
Yeah, I mean, it's just fun to break things, right? Like, it's fun to... I like doing security, both attack and defense. Like, I really enjoy doing incident response when it's not my incident. I really enjoy it as a consultant. It's less fun when you're a CISO.
It's like forensics. Right. It's like you're the guy who comes in, there's a murder scene.
Right.
You got to solve it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I bet if you ask cops, they could never say this publicly, but privately, they're like, I kind of like being a murder detective.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It sucks
that
somebody died, but like they enjoy the work. So fortunately, generally people aren't dying when we're talking about it. Something bad's happened and you get to investigate and understand and you... Unlike other forms of engineering, you have an adversary, right? So, like, you build the Golden Gate Bridge. Your adversary is earthquakes and corrosion and wind, right? Non-intelligent things that you figure out how, and you build the bridge, and then you're like, okay, we're done, right? You never build a bridge in security. You're playing chess. And whatever you do, you can't just read a bunch of books and play the perfect chess game. Your opponents always get better. And so I always found that from an attacker and defender perspective, it's a lot of fun to... playing against real people.
That's how Cliff
Stoll
the
psychology
in the cuckoo's egg.
Yeah,
that was what that whole book was about.
It's a great book.
We talked to Bill Cheswick. Yeah. Same thing. He was just an innocent, you know, engineer who had to solve a problem. Built, you know, the first honeypot, and that's how you get into it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I bet because the human mind loves solving problems, these are some of the best, most interesting problems because it's a human adversary.
Right, right. I mean, if we were growing up in classical Rome, you'd have to be a philosopher or like, you know, solve math or, you know, a philosoph or whatever they called scientists. It's like, but if you grew up in the latter 20th, early 21st century, and you want to pull things apart and figure out how they work, hacking's a pretty good way.
These days it's the
great
you're
also
game.
Hacking into the human brain.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, and I've always wondered
psychology about involved.
Matt Cutts, our friend Matt Cutts, dealing with, you know, spam, you'd think he'd be just a growly, nasty, miserable person. And he's the nicest person I practically know. And how does it affect, because you're interested in both the engineering part of it, but also the human part of it.
Right.
And seeing this part of humanity always, you know, trying to be a step ahead of you. Does it ever get you down?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, that's the change I made in my career. So when I joined, before I joined Yahoo, I was just pure InfoSec, right? So I was a professional hacker. I worked as a consultant. I started my own consulting company. We did a lot of work for Microsoft. So if you remember those early trustworthy computing days, I spent a bunch of the early days of our marriage and several years up in Redmond breaking Microsoft products. And that's
what I
did.
And so,
you know, I did kind of just pure InfoSec, right? Which is about the programs. It's about the bugs. It's about the computers. And then when I joined Yahoo, obviously that was a huge part of my job. A huge part of it is in any executive position is just human management, right? Yeah. Like one of the challenges with Yahoo is it was a very important company that was dying, right? And by the time I got there, they hadn't had a CISO for about 18 months.
They'd already, and we want to make this clear because I misstated this last week. They'd already had that billion user breach.
That's right.
That was in the history. That was in the past.
We did have a breach.
You had to clean up. You had to clean it up.
Right. So that billion user breach was something that we figured out was likely, but we never figured out the root cause.
Right.
Partially because Yahoo didn't have any logging at all, effectively. we had figured out because when I got there, the number one security problem was there's a massive account takeover issue.
Yes.
And so we did.
I remember that.
Yeah. And people
get
their Yahoo accounts getting taken over.
All the time.
And then spammed.
Yep.
And it seemed to me, just from all my consulting work, this is totally statistically improbable compared to every
other company.
People
would call the radio show all the time. My Yahoo email's been taken over. Yeah. They're sending out spam asking for money.
Yeah.
How did this happen?
Right. And so I asked my team, hey, I want you to do a statistical analysis of these accounts. And I gave them a bunch of cuts I wanted them to take. And we had this young lady who was an intern at the time, is now a lawyer. She went to law school and she does great work. And I got to run into her professionally. It was just really cool. And she did all this data science of just cutting all the data. And one of the most interesting graphs was if you looked at the date of last password change for the accounts that were taken over, it was like this. And then there was a super drop off.
Yeah.
And when you looked at that graph, that drop off happened at the exact month. The resolution was only to the month, so we couldn't do to the day. The exact month that Yahoo had changed the way that passwords were stored. And so that was a pretty clear indication that there had been a breach of that the older system. And this has happened before, over a year before I had gone to Yahoo, that there was a change in how passwords are stored and secured, that when that happened, they had closed the vulnerability that somebody had used. Now, we didn't have actual logs of how the data was stolen. We didn't have direct evidence. And so when we took this to Marissa and the other executive team, from their perspective, it was like, can you prove it? And my answer is no. It's just highly suggestive evidence. And from their perspective, they're like, okay, well, we're not going to disclose anything because you can't prove anything, right? And at that time, you know, Marissa, if you remember, Marissa took over because of an activist investor. By the time I joined, it was like a year and a half after she'd been there. The honeymoon was over. She had her own activist investor who was now pushing them to make money. She didn't want any kind of negative publicity at all. And so my relationship with her was mostly just her saying, can you absolutely totally prove something is true?
You're always the bad news guy, Alex.
Yeah. I mean, that's what sucks about being a CISO, right? Yeah, like, yeah. I would literally walk into a room in either Yahoo or Facebook and people would be like, oh, Stamos is here.
Yeah.
Can I say that or did I just get you?
No. You'll we'll just bleep it.
Okay.
Well, that's it on the best of 2022. I hope you enjoyed our trip down memory lane. It's so much fun doing this week in Google with our team. Of course, the people on camera, Amp Pruitt and Stacey Higginbotham, Jeff Jarvis, all the people behind the scenes who make this show possible. We've got a great bunch of people. Benito, who is our technical director, Jason Howell, our producer, Burke and John, who run the studio. Thank all of them. Thank all of you. Most importantly, for watching and listening, thanks to our Club Twit members and all of you. Don't worry, we're coming back next week, January 4th. We've got a brand new show. We reconvene and start talking about the world around us this week in Google. I hope you have a wonderful kind of holiday season. Enjoy your New Year's, New Year's Eve. Don't get too crazy. We'll see you right back here January 4th. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining me for this trip down memory lane on This Week in Google. Have a great week. Happy New Year, everybody.
I'm Jason Howell. What do you get your favorite geek who already has everything? Well, I know just the thing. It's a Club Twit gift subscription, of course. Twit podcasts keep them informed and entertained with the most relevant tech news and podcasts available. And with a Club Twit subscription, they get even more. They get access to all of our podcasts ad-free, the members-only Discord, exclusive outtakes, behind-the-scenes, and special content, and exclusive shows like Hands on Mac, Hands on Windows, and the Untitled Linux Show. You can purchase your geek's gift at twit.tv/clubtwit, and they're going to thank you every day for it.